Blog Talk Radio.
This, ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen and ladies, I had to make a video about this young man, Dexter Reed. I want to give it a little time, like I always do. I want to see if there's more information that come out, more body-worn camera footage that comes out, anything else that I can add before I make a video and, you know, either be the one disproving or proving if cops are right or wrong. Now, we're going to put a link in the description section. There's a website called, I think it's called COPE or something like that, C-O-P-E. And that website has all the body-worn camera, all the police report, internal affairs, press release, everything is on that website. We'll link it in the description below so you can watch it all on your own. Brandon Tatum ain't trying to, it's like being at church. You need to read the Bible for yourself. Your pastor can tell you only so much. Look at all the evidence for yourself. But we're going to go through this shooting real quick because I think it's invaluable to articulate. I'll set the tempo with this. I do not understand for the life of me how people are outraged at this shooting. And I think the police commissioner, whom I met when I was a police officer, I think he gave a clear articulation of what should be the statement made by law enforcement.
96 rounds and 41 seconds. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, it is a lot of shots fired, but you have four officers firing simultaneously. They're using semi-automatic weapons. The average clip holds probably about 17 rounds. And so it's not, you know, even though it's a lot of rounds being fired, it's certainly understandable how that many could be fired in that short a period of time.
And talk to me about Omar laid out the body cam video. You've seen it as well. What do you see in this encounter? What do you see in this incident? The preliminary investigation suggests that Reed opened fire on the officers first, hitting an officer. Does that change this incident? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's important here. The way the family and the attorney, and I certainly understand where they're coming from, but they're making it sound as if he was shot because he was not wearing a seatbelt. He was shot because he shot a police officer. That's why he was shot. I mean, the stop was made, and we can argue whether or not tactical officers should be making traffic stops for seatbelts and things like that. But it would not have occurred had he not fired first and shot a police officer, period. I mean, so you can't shoot a cop and expect not to get shot in return. That's just the way it is. And so, you know, I really understand what they're saying. This is going to be investigated by the state's attorney. It's going to be investigated by the Civilian Office of Police Accountability. You know, the final shots that were fired are the only ones, and I saw all the videos, that give me some concern, those last three shots in particular. Now, even though the majority of shots were fired while he was in the car and these very dark tinted windows, obviously he wasn't incapacitated because he was able to get out of the car and get to the rear of the car. They believe he was still armed. They continued to fire. Now, the last three shots are the ones that'll have to be scrutinized very, very closely. But having been in shootouts, if you will, before myself, your adrenaline is pumping, and believe me, it's a very, very tense situation. And, you know, when you're firing that gun, you're trying to make sure that that individual is no longer a threat to you. So not to make excuses, it does need to be looked at. I am concerned about the last three shots, but the use of deadly force, in my opinion, overall was justified in this case.
And I'll play his clip in a minute, but nobody should be surprised this happened. Nobody should be defending this guy. He actually shot another police officer that was black. He's a criminal. When you shoot a cop, they're going to shoot you back. It's that. That's the end of it. But I want to just make sure before we watch this video, this is done for educational purposes. This is not for me to be salacious, not for me to show violence just for no reason. It's for educational purposes only. All right? So watch this with me. Roll the clip.
Roll the windows down.
Put the window down, man.
Roll the window down.
First of all, he was previously arrested in April of 2023 from retail theft from Zara. And then he was arrested in July before that. Just shortly after that, in July the 13th, 2023, two blocks from the Union Center, charged with felony aggravated unlawful use of a firearm. So this is the person they're dealing with. Now, do they know this? I doubt it.
What are you doing?
And I'm sure they figured it out right here.
Roll this one down.
Roll that one down, too. Hey, don't roll the window up. Roll the window up.
Okay.
Do not roll the window up.
Unlock
the doors now. Unlock the doors now. Unlock the doors now. Open the door now. Open the door now. Open the door now.
All right, I want y'all to listen to this very clearly. I'm going to play it back. Let's walk through this first portion of this incident. I don't understand right now what is actually happening when it comes to a traffic stop. If you ask me, I think they were interdicting, they were engaging or interfering with him doing something that he shouldn't have been doing. Because normally when you conduct a traffic stop, you pull up at the rear of the vehicle, you flash your lights and all of the above, they pull over. I don't see a cop car behind him. And I know these are plainclothes officers. They're probably in unmarked cars. So I don't see anybody behind him. It looks like she pulled in front of him and then they got out. My police experience says that they may have had a hunch that he was doing something he wasn't supposed to be doing. He was getting ready to engage in a violent act, or he was a suspect that they that identified with somebody that they may have been looking for, or something of that nature. Because this unit is not a patrol unit. They're a plainclothes unit. So for them to pull up, they had enough to stop him because he probably wasn't wearing a seatbelt. So they used that as the initial stop. But I think their instincts was telling them that he was doing more than what just not wearing a seatbelt. Now, I don't have the full context, but police officers know they can smell it a mile away that something is going to happen. And surprise, 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 this kid is in the car, already arrested for a felony charge of unlawful use of a firearm. He's sitting in the car right now with a firearm illegally. About to try to shoot it out. But I want y'all to listen to this very clearly because you're going to hear, because some people are like, he didn't shoot him. He shot the police officers. If you listen to it clearly, turn the volume up on your phone or whatever you're listening to this on, you're going to hear two succession of shots. You're going to hear pop, 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 pop. Two things come to my mind. That is the indication, in my opinion, of him shooting versus cop shooting. The caliber of gun he has versus the caliber that they're using. That's why you hear the differentiation in shot sounds. That could be, or it could be just a distance thing, shooting from a distance versus close up. But you can tell that it's his shots versus their shots. Roll the clip.
Open the door now. I think
pow, 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 to me is a higher caliber weapon. This department may carry 40 cal. I mean, not 40 cal. Yeah, 40 cal. They carry 40s. He probably shooting with a 9. And that's why you hear it, pow, 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 pow. 100% proof that he shot first. And then, if you didn't believe that he shot first, I'm going to skip through it. They shot over 90-some times, which is not surprising because when you have multiple officers shooting at the same time, just say, I mean, my math ain't that great, but just say you had 10 officers on the scene. Each officer shot 6 times because they all are visibly seeing a person as a threat. They're not like, hey, you shot 3, I'm going to shoot 2, you shoot 5. Did you hit him? You hit him. I didn't hit him.
Wow.
He hit him. Mm-hmm. He down. They ain't got time to do that. Each person is viewing the threat as, bang, 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 bang. We got to eliminate the threat. Just say you had 10 people shooting 6 shots. That's 60 right there. And 6 shots is just bang, 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 bang. Hold on. Bang, 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 bang. I think I did it. That's nothing in a shootout scenario where somebody has already shot at you. And here's another thing I think people need to understand, too, is that you, when the shots start flying, you really don't know who's shooting at this point. Because you hit the first initial shots, you're getting shot at. But then you hear a bunch of shots going off, and it's not like you're poised in this moment. You already think that this is it for you. Your adrenaline is rushing. You're getting tunnel vision. Dexterity in your hands is going. Your training is going out the window. Most people that haven't been training often. And you're not going to be thinking to yourself, that sounds like only us shooting at him. Maybe he's not shooting back. It's not going to happen. So they just firing, You know, the chaotic situation. The guy's not giving up. They don't see any signs of him giving up. They got to keep going. And so as you can see, the shots continue to be fired, fire, 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 fire. He ended up getting shot back on the ground. The cops don't know if he has the gun on him. They don't know if it's under him. They don't know if he's playing possum. I think there were some questionable shots at the end. I did not watch it because I don't want to get banned. But according to the ex-police commissioner, he said that there was a couple shots at the end, which could easily be argued away, in my opinion, because you don't know what his status is and if he had his hand up under him. He already showed a propensity that he wanted to kill everybody. And so it may end up being justified that somebody shot him a few times at the end. But, I mean, there you go. He's gone. Just like that. Another brother in the street gone. He would have been gone by the police or by another black man, given his lifestyle. And so this officer is clearly upset that another brother's gone and then that an officer's down over here that was initially shot. And now you're talking about another brother got shot. Why are they not caring about this brother? Why do they not have anything to say about his safety? This brother got shot by a thug. And they out here crying and fainting and passing out. It's insane to me. It is insane to me. I don't know how cops just consistently get a bad rap for no reason. They pull this man over on a traffic stop. What would make a rational human think that I'm going to shoot it out with the police? I guarantee you that felony that he was arrested for last year, unlawful use of a firearm, he probably didn't deal with that, right? He's probably still awaiting trial. He's out on bond.
Yeah.
And if he get into trouble, after the judge told him, you're going to get double for your trouble. And then he's stealing from Zara. He probably has stolen goods in the car with an illegal gun. And so he know he's going to go to prison for a good amount of time. And he probably was getting ready to do something he wasn't supposed to do. Because, bro, just think about this for a minute. If you somehow got a gun on you, you had a gun on you last time when you got arrested, illegal use of a firearm, and you didn't feel like you had to risk it all. A lot of times when people go risk it all is because they got a lot more to lose than what we think they got. A rational person would be like, oh, man, I'm caught dead to rights. It ain't my gun. Somebody else had this gun in the car. It ain't my gun. This ain't my car. These ain't my pants. Matter of fact, I belong to Christ. So this ain't even my body. You know, so somebody will go down a list and say some stuff like that and try to hide their crimes instead of shooting it out with the police.
How you doing, Pianki?
So it makes me feel that when the investigation is complete, they're going to find out.
Doing good. How about you?
Oh, doing all right, I guess. Doing all right.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling a little better. Little better. I've got my medicine that you suggested. How you doing,
I'm
Mike?
Pill, pretty bitter, ain't it?
Yeah, I got the pill. I got the pill. You told me about that, and I said, "Hell no, I ain't going for that. I'm going to go for the pill." Let me get. 225. You're also on. How you doing, Lori Ann?
That would be me.
Who be me, Mike?
Too bad of me.
Okay, yep. Let me get Lori Ann on. We got Mike, Lori Ann.
Howdy do. Happy Saturday.
People on the switchboard, you know what to do. Push one on your keypad, and we'll get you on. Yeah, that was kind of a senseless shooting, you know, from this guy. He just shot, I don't know, 4 times, I think. They sound like they want another Floyd situation this summer.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, but again, this is a guy, you got to understand, this is a guy, the cops told him not to roll his window up, and he did. It's a tenant window. You know, it's a dark tenant window. They can't see him or they can't see what he has in the car. You know, and they told him not to do it, and he did it anyway. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he had a gun, which he wasn't supposed to have, you know?
True. Yeah.
So there you go. You know, I'm not saying, you know, what was it, 40, 50, 80 shots, whatever it was.
90, 96.
96. So, I mean, look, how many cops were there? Four, five, six cops, and each one of them has a 9mm with a but probably 17, 18 rounds in the clip. So, I mean, you got to figure, you know, if all those cops are emptying their clips, it's going to be not 80, 90 shots, you know?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Mike, do you remember the two Louisiana cops that were shot and the guy stood over them? He came from Kansas City.
Oh, wow.
It was a black male. You remember that? It was a black male. It came from Kansas City. He wrote a manifesto that he was going to kill the police. Went to Louisiana.
I remember that.
And then he hijacked him. And the one was on the ground.
Was that the one that came in here and killed, was it Warwick Dunn's mother, who was a cop at the time?
I just know he came about a town.
You might not have been here at the time. You might not have been here at the time because he was a football player. He was a famous football player. Played at a Baton Rouge High School. Went over to Florida State. Played there. Played a little bit in the NFL. But some guy came in here and killed his mother, who was a cop at the time. Mm. You know?
Well, there's been a lot of cases. You had another one that was stopped at a red light. The guy in the car pulled up behind him, you know, in traffic, got out of his car, came around, shot the officer. He sat there for the red light. And you don't know how many has been shot in Chicago, police officers that were parked on the side of the curb, filling out their paperwork.
Now, that happened in New York City also. Yeah.
Right. Well, in these big Democrat-run cities, that you know, particularly Chicago. I mean, you look at on any given weekend in Chicago, there's at least probably, I don't know, 20 shootings on any given weekend in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that's
just the way it is.
Pianchi, you got the total for the year?
It's around 18, it's coming down. It's about the 1,800, 2,000. You know, when I first started, it was like 4,875 in a year's time.
Yeah. It's amazing how many shootings.
But it's only natural. It's coming down. You ain't got nobody to shoot.
Well, you wait till this summer, and all these illegals are getting all the benefits and all the money. And, you know, just put yourself in these folks' position, and they're living day to day, trying to make ends meet. And you're in here in your country, your own country, illegal, and you're getting benefits, medical, a place to stay when they can find your place, all for free.
Well, you know, you look at this stuff that's going on, and Mike, go ahead, you get yourself in there.
Yeah, there's this website called heyjackass.com. And it's all that site is murder stats for Chicago. Like, killed to date, 13, shot and wounded, 84, shot, total shot, 97, total homicides, 14, from April to date, you know? So that's what we got to date in Chicago, you know? In terms of homicides and killings and shots and wounded and all that stuff. So, this is on any given day, there's a number of, you know, in Chicago, that is one of the murder capitals of the United States, you know, is Chicago.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, per capita, at one point, a few years back, New Orleans was the leader at one point, I mean, and what does New Orleans have in common with Chicago? It's a Democrat city.
Well, it's a majority black and it's Democrat.
Yep.
Well, it doesn't matter what your race is if you don't enforce the law.
It's not just black, Pianchi. It's not just black, Pianchi. It's a chocolate city. It's evidenced by the former mayor.
I don't know anywhere in the United States, or have I heard, that white folks shooting up to each other like blacks do.
Nope.
I mean, I may be mistaken, but it just don't happen. And we have to tell it like it is. It's always this case when you be telling the facts, and they say, well, whites do that too. They white women abort and all this stuff. Well, I mean, this is a area that you control politically. Look what Clyburn said here just the other day, making that crazy notion. So that's going to have to be, and you got to go. You said we need a black mayor. You said we need black police chiefs. You said we need black firefighters. You said we need black school teachers. Well, you got a lieutenant governor in Illinois. You got a prosecuting attorney in Cook County, the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, all that, and you still having these problems.
Well, it's just like any other big city. They're not enforcing the law. Doesn't care. It doesn't matter what race you are. If you don't enforce the law, things get crazy.
Whites get shot all the time too. Mike, whites get shot, but I'll never see whites going out burning the goddamn town down.
No. And that's the thing. I mean, look, when you got cities like New York City that have just no bail, you can basically get away with anything, including murder in New York City.
Pretty much.
Oh, no, yeah.
They'll come in here and arrest you, but you'll be out within the hour. And you can go and create.
The thing, too. Nobody's picking on anybody. It's just this. If these things were not happening, you couldn't talk about them. You couldn't talk about it. And when you got kids, black kids in these neighborhoods, having to wear bulletproof backpacks.
Yeah.
And when they go down the street, going to their school, they have to skip along zigzag. That's what they instructed. You go like this, like this. And then when one of your major hospitals have to put clothes on the door because there's so many shot victims coming in, somebody needs to open their eyes. And when you have a dumbass mayor like Lori Lightfoot, so the police don't engage in any foot chases. Well, what kind of crazy mess? And what did she tell the police dogs? Not to run out to nobody?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now you know who's to blame, don't you? It's Kamala Harris, because she said there's going to be more riots. Maxine Waters, she said, go get up in their face. Cause trouble wherever they are.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that they started taking money. Oh, let me get Kathy and Daniel. You're also on, by the way. Welcome.
Hey, y'all. What are y'all doing?
Just complaining.
Just complaining.
Lori was there. Well, I don't think she was there in 2020 in a. The riots were happening in Portland and with BLM and stuff. And we saw what happened. The police were trying to protect that courthouse, right? And these people were trying to take down the damn fence and stuff like that and get into that courthouse and do something and burn that courthouse to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the police the cops got castigated for using tear gas and things of that nature
right.
to protect that courthouse.
Yeah,
those,
I remember.
Those riots, those rioters should have been charged with insurrection.
And let's not forget that the BLM riots were mostly white people. If I remember, some of those riots were mostly white people.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had a lot of whites. Probably wasn't even from the country.
Well, I don't care where they were from. They were there.
But you know, remember in 2016 when Trump got, no, 2017. Yeah, 2016 when Trump got elected. They riot, they burned, they broke out windows, set cars on fire, trash cans on fire, took down America. They did all that stuff.
Yeah.
Then they came along on George Floyd. Riot, burnt up stores and everything. Now, you know, if these young blacks that's doing this carjacking, how many of us on here have witnessed an increase in your car insurance? How many on here tonight have witnessed an increase in your food prices? In your homeowner's insurance? Well, that's the reason why.
You know, yesterday, I've got a picture of a gentleman. I don't know who he, you know, what race or anything, but he had a machine gun hijacking an SUV from a female. A machine gun.
Right.
Getting machine guns.
And guys, Michael Brown?
Yeah,
no,
I remember
Mike Brown.
The hands up, don't shoot.
Which was a freaking lie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? But there were riots because of him, you know? It was, and then, of course, the little guy that was, you know, freaking in the wrong place at the wrong time, but he was a criminal in training down there in Miami. What's the guy's name? I'm blanking on his name now. But Zimmerman and all that stuff, you know.
Tavon Martin.
You know, the thing with Tavon Martin, and I have a friend in Florida that's close to this matter, and he says, well, Zimmerman was this guy that was a small guy who had a chip on his shoulder and all that stuff. The problem is Tavon Martin was in a place that he shouldn't have been in at a time that he shouldn't have been there. All right. This was a gated community. All right. And he decided to jump the fence and take a shortcut back to his dad's apartment or whatever it was. He shouldn't have been there. And he was dressed in such a way that, you know, he was dressed like a criminal. Well, you know, hoodie pulled over his head and all that stuff, and this, that, and the other, you know, and all that stuff. So, and at the time Zimmerman was there, he was living in that thing, you know, he was living in that community. And so you see a guy in your community traveling through yards that he shouldn't be in, you know. What are you expected to do there, right? I mean, at a time that he's supposed to not be there, you know. What are you going to do?
Well, just because he had a hoodie on don't mean he's a criminal, but he shouldn't have been doubling back around trying to jump on Zimmerman. That's what got him in some trouble. He should have went home.
Yeah, that was a...
And, you know, here's another thing, too. You talk about Ferguson. I know Ferguson very well. Blacks, homeowners, when whites start leaving Ferguson, for whatever the reason, blacks left North St. Louis City in areas like Walnut Park, Henry Rose, and they moved because of the crime out of those areas in the city. And they moved on the outskirts of the city, which is called the Ring District. Because there's a circular situation of small towns like Berkeley, Ferguson, Spanish Lake, and so on.
So they moved there and bought them homes and have been keeping up the neighborhood, the grass. And, I mean, it was real pristine. The school district was nice. Now along comes Mike Brown and the Ferguson incident and all the rioting, the burning down the stores and looting and stuff. So these blacks have to leave because they don't want to be a part of that. But when they leave like that, they are losing equity they had built in their home, in their neighborhoods. They lost tremendously. So nobody says anything about that. And many of them, because I had a nephew who stayed behind the Quick Trip that they burnt down, Corey, he had two daughters. And he moved across the Missouri River into St. Charles County. Many of them did. St. Charles County is about 90% white. Damn near all the police department is white. And that's where they moved, even to Wentzville, where the GM assembly plant is. So they wasn't trying to get away from white police because they moved to white areas trying to be safe. Nobody says anything about that. And that's just the way, that's what happened. Florissant, Missouri has became either the number one or two largest black areas because blacks moved to Florissant. Florissant used to be all white. They moved there for decent homes, property value, and protection. Look it up, Florissant, Missouri, and it's standing as far as being black enclave.
And Pianchi, I've said it before about Michael Brown. The guy was a thug in training, number one. Number two, the guy, when that cop saw him, the cop was on his way to another call, right? And so when he saw him, he was breaking the law. The law says you're not to walk down the middle of the street. That's the law. It's a safety issue. You're walking down the middle of the street, and you don't know what's coming from what direction. You're going to get hit. And I don't care how big you are, you know, you get hit by a 2,000-pound car, the car is going to win, you know. You know, so Michael Brown was breaking the law anyway, you know, by being in the middle of the street. And that, I'm blanking on the name of the doggone cop. He stopped him and tried to tell him this. And he get, and what's his name, attacks him. Again, Michael Brown attacks the cop for trying to point out, well, you're not supposed to be in the middle of the street. You can't be walking someplace, but you're not supposed to be in the middle of the street.
The cop's name was Darren Wilson.
Darren Wilson, that's right. So
they was on a call, like you said, and he's driving, and he told Mike Brown and whoever else was with him they need to get out the street. And if he went by, they MF'd him.
Yep.
And then he came back. Mike Brown came over to the passenger side, and one thing led to another. He reached in and tried to take Wilson's gun. The gun went off in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think you're going to do? You ain't going to just let you walk off? He walked off. Wilson got out the car and told him to stop. He turns around and started charging Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think's going to happen?
Well,
yeah,
even
especially the fact that Ferguson is a bigger guy. Again, he's a bigger guy than Wilson. You know, when you're seeing a 300-pound guy coming at you, what do you think you're gonna? And you're maybe 180 pounds, 190 pounds. What do you think you're gonna do? You know.
I knew his father. His father knew me.
Mm-hmm.
His mother's name is Leslie McFadden. She wrote a book called Shame the Devil. Then she turned around and ran for mayor in Ferguson. Blacks didn't come out and vote for her. Ferguson was about 67-70% black. Apparently the people in that community liked it where it is. It was too far from Ferguson. It was West Ferguson, then it was East Ferguson, there by Emerson Electric, close to Westfield Plaza. And that's where a lot of blacks live. So it was a nice, decent community. Then elements started coming out of the city. Over the baseball field where my grandson used to play, there used to be a lot of townhouses. Then they turned into some other arrangement, and things started going down. So that's just the way that things happen.
And think about it. You know, you look at these places. You look at Chicago, for instance, and you look at it's not just the fact that the blacks are killing each other there, but it's the fact that you've got blacks and Hispanic, and it's mostly black and Hispanic cities, right?
Well, Hispanic, or should I say Latinos, stayed in the area called Little Village.
Yeah.
And they don't allow blacks to come in there. You can go on the internet and you can see, type in YouTube, shootings in Little Village. And during all those marches and riots in Chicago, blacks tried to march on Little Village. And them people in Little Village said, you ain't coming up in here. Matter of fact, you see one scene where a vehicle tried to drive through, and they shot the vehicle up. It crashed, caught on fire, and you see the occupants running. Latinos just didn't allow that. And wait a minute. You also had a neighborhood, a street, that was all black, and they tried to go, and the marchers and protesters tried to go up in there, and the blacks said, you ain't coming up in here. They're right outside of Ferguson on West Florissant. Let's see. No, New Halls Ferry and Vale, V-A-L-L-E. Google it. It's over there in Barrington Downs, a black community where the average house is about $750,000. They lined up on Vale Avenue at that intersection of Vale and Halls Ferry. And they told the protesters, you ain't coming up in here. Nobody talks about that. Further out toward the Mississippi River, you got a lot of Ghanaians stay out there. So you got blacks that fight there too. But the news don't never portray it like that. They always portray it as the evil old white man. And
I remember, what was it? Was it the Koreans or was it that stood on top of their businesses with their guns to protect it? It might not have been in Ferguson. It might have been out there in California someplace where there was
LA,
a riot.
That's the Rodney King riots in L.A. That's L.A.
Yeah. That's L.A., yeah. But
Hey, is that Naj right here?
Yeah,
hello.
Hey, Naj.
We'll see how it goes tonight, man. I tend to trigger people around here, so, same body to see what's going on.
Bring the fireworks with you, don't you, Naj?
Well, right now, Sarge isn't here, so,
Well, you don't have to call for backup, man. It's just a conversation, brother. You'll be all right.
I mean, look, and I've said it before. The Democratic convention this year is going to be a shit show because it's going to be every bit as bad or worse than the one that happened in 1968. There's going to be riots and stuff like that,
Yeah, if you want to bet $50 on that, I'll bet $50 with you because that's not happening.
You think they're going to have it locked down?
in 68, you had leftists against centrist Democrats, and the party couldn't form a coalition, so it came down to violence. But the people you're talking about now, the majority of Biden supporters, talking about centrists. I'm not talking about leftists coming in there. Those are the people they don't want in the party. They don't want that Bernie coalition or anybody to the left of Kamala Harris around anything. Now, the Republican convention might be interesting because there's going to be some Republicans who say, I don't want Laura Trump on the RNC not giving the money down ballot to people who are running because she wants to spend the money on Trump. That's going to be a problem.
That could be. I wondered
Naj, this is the thing about that. Laura Trump is there because here's the thing with this. I've said this before. There's been a number, Ronna Romney McDaniel, when she was there, put her corruption off to the side. She was a very corrupt person, all right? Ronna Romney McDaniel, McRomney, whatever you want to call her. But Trump would eventually, endorse a candidate, he's supposed to be the leader of the party, right? And if he decides to endorse, say, Bianchi for whatever, for a House member, Bianchi is supposed to get that money get money from the party to help him, get into Congress, right? But that wasn't happening under Ronna Romney McDaniel, all right? Yeah, it happens here and there, but not on a wholesale basis, because there were a great number of guys that President Trump did endorse that never got the money and never got elected because they didn't get the money. That's why Laura Trump is there.
Yeah, brother, I would suggest you look online and see if you can find a person complaining about they didn't get their funding from the RNC and that's why they lost the election. No, the point I'm making is when you start doing this nepotism stuff where you put friends and family members in high positions, and you fire the people who are there, this is the thing. Now, it's one thing to call out corruption, which, should be called out. But there's something about institutional memory. There's something about older people who know how to do stuff because they've done it before. So when you've got, like, GOP guys who've been there 20 years and they know the whole process as far as elections, they know who to call, when to call, what media buys to do, all that kind of stuff, when you run them out, because you want to bring in your preferred people, as a party, you lose a lot. So, I mean, you can talk around it all you want to, but, Trump supporters should look at that and say, wait a minute, let's make sure we're not getting rid of people who are actually good at this stuff. And, hell, y'all think that's your job. You know what I mean? When you push out some of the old folks because the young folks are cheaper, and sometimes you lose some of that, intelligence from the job.
But you see, Naj, the candidates not getting the money wasn't the main issue with Ronna Romney McDaniel. The main issue was her corruption.
Well, she was spending money where they didn't think she should spend it, like, first class seats and all this, first class hotel rooms and all that.
Yeah.
She spent a lot of money that they think, and plus the, let's face it, people weren't giving money to the RNC like they were.
That's right.
So y'all making an argument that this is right.
But I'm not making an argument she's corrupt. I think she just went along, she just did what everybody else had done before her.
And plus, she's
going to call her corrupt.
She's part of the establishment that hates Trump.
Well, she's never
part of the establishment that hates Trump, when he told her to get rid of that Romney last name, and she did it for him. Like, come on, man. At a certain point, y'all got to say, wait a minute.
But still,
this is a little too far.
She's still kin to Romney. Romney hates Trump because he called him out for being a loser. He's a loser.
And she made her choice, right? She made her choice of who she was going to be loyal to. Trump asked her to drop that last name, and she did it. So, like, look, man, y'all got to stop talking about people like they're superheroes, man. People can make mistakes.
But again, Naj, I think the reason why she's gone, they tried to get rid of her a couple years back, and it didn't work. She survived it, right?
We can move on. We can move on. She's gone.
Can I say something? Yeah, please. Okay, our founding fathers, Nas said something just a minute ago about how these members, you know, that have been there 20 years, you know, they know who to contact, when to contact, where the money's at, whatnot. We saw this on the internet the other night. Our founding fathers never intended people to be elected year after year after year and make a lifetime of this thing. There should be no 20-year people up there. Thomas Jefferson, 33 years old. James Monroe, 18. Alexander Hamilton, 21. Aaron Burr, 20. John Marshall, 20. Betsy Ross, 24. James Madison, 25. At their age at signing. Oh, in 1776, in the year 1776, that's how old these people were. And they did not intend for anybody.
To have long careers.
I was talking. Let me finish, please.
Go ahead, Daniel. Go ahead, Daniel.
Thank you. Okay, they did not intend for anybody to be there 20 years and at 55 or 60 years old. You know, back then you probably didn't even live that long anyways.
No, that's
but,
true.
You know, they intended, and George Washington, he was the one that came up with the two-term limit. He told, I believe it was Jefferson, that 8 years is plenty for one person, you know, to run the show. There's where your two-term limit came in. It's not like it was some bright idea that a 40, 50, or 60-year-old, you know, that's been up there so long. You know what I'm saying? I just wanted to let y'all know.
They put in two terms after FDR. After FDR, they decided there was never going to be a president who served multiple terms the same way FDR did, which is much later. And again, those people you're talking about, they served in government for years after they did initially. And again, my point was, you guys tried to make the argument about McDaniel. The point was, Laura Trump shouldn't be there because she's not qualified to be there. And the people they pushed out, these aren't senators or representatives or anything like that.
Tell me the qualifications to be there. Hold on.
Let me just say
this.
We're
not talking about senators.
I don't think Laura Trump should be there, period. I don't think she should be there at all.
Thank you. See, that's that simple.
I really don't.
It's that simple.
Tell me the qualifications. You said she wasn't qualified, so tell me the qualifications.
The qualifications are people who work from election cycle to election cycle, from small city elections all the way to statewide elections, to where not only do they have the contacts for it, but they got the experience. And to throw all of that away, look, y'all will understand. I'll explain this in a better way. Y'all have worked at a job where they decided they were going to get rid of some of the older people to bring in somebody cheaper to do the same job, and then that cheaper person found out that old person had some institutional memory and some experience and things that the company didn't put. The things the company didn't really, codified as far as money and things like that, but they were good at their job because they knew what they were doing. So we're not talking about elected officials. We're talking about not only the volunteers, but the people who run your local, let's say you're in North Carolina, your local GOP headquarters there. And, you know, you've got some old dude there, silver streaks in his hair, some old woman there with the thickest glasses ever seen. But guess what? They know how to run an election because they've done it year after year after year. That's all I'm saying.
Here's the deal, though. She's not the only one that's there. They brought in this guy, Michael Whatley, who was the chair of the North Carolina Republican Party as well. So they're co-chairs of the RNC. It's not just one. They brought in a guy with the experience of being a chair, for his state, okay, for the state Republican Party. He has the experience. He's the one with the experience, and he's a Trump guy.
If he's a Trump guy, there's nothing wrong with that. If he has the experience, then, yeah, he should be there. But the point is, kind of brings up the idea of I can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose any voters, because the idea that you see this thing with Lord Trump there where they're clearly going to funnel money to his lawsuits and nobody's going to say anything, okay. Y'all got it. I ain't going to argue with you. If y'all agree with it, it's fine.
Well, yeah. But Biden's doing the same thing.
Biden's doing the exact same thing. The DNC has been funding Biden's, so Biden criticizes Trump for using RNC funds to help with legal fees, but he's doing it himself. The hypocrisy continues.
$1.5 million.
Yep.
What do you mean?
Yep.
Just like the DNC, they have their experienced leadership in there that know how to put a contract on somebody, get them murdered, and not get blamed for it. That's the experience. That's the experience of the DNC. That's the experience I think the RNC needs to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
So we can eliminate some of your folks.
Well, again, first of all, I'm not a Democrat. I have no home as far as DNC and RNC.
Uh-huh.
But second of all,
uh-huh,
I'm definitely not going to be here pushing the idea of parties killing people. I don't know if that's something we should be
I agree with you on. And Naj, if you hadn't heard about that, look it up, because Biden, the DNC helped Biden with his legal fees surrounding the classified documents case.
Right.
If you haven't heard of that,
that just recently came out.
So just so that you know, I'm not making it up.
Yeah, but that's a normal process. The president is not paying for that out of his pocket. Like if somebody, when Trump was impeached, he didn't pay for his defense out of his pocket. That's part of the process. That's everybody.
Well,
the thing is, Biden has criticized Trump for doing that.
You're honest on that because Trump wasn't allowed to pay for it.
Well, he shouldn't have to. Imagine if the president was in office and you just tried to impeach him every 6 months and he had to pay the money out of his personal account. Like, no, can't do that. It wouldn't work.
Yeah. So let's see. Presidential candidate should be able to collect legal fees and everything while he's running for office.
Well, let me break in real quick. We got a lot of people on the switchboard. If you'd like to join, push 1 on your keypad, and I will get you on. And carry on.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Also, you know, we're looking at they're running a cover with all this lawfare shit. That they're going against President Trump. They're running a color revolution and running a coup against President Trump, you know? And you know, all this stuff that they've done, and the first lawfare stuff that was run against the president wasn't Trump. It was what they did against President Nixon.
No, that was while he was in office.
So you don't think Nixon was guilty?
I don't know if he was guilty or not. I don't know.
We have his memoirs where he admits he was guilty.
Where is your evidence for that?
Oh, pull up Nixon's book.
Where's the legal documents for that?
I didn't cite legal documents. I told you, look up Nixon's book, his memoirs. He says that he was guilty of that. He said he should have stopped it. It's his fault. Buck stops with him, and he should have been the one to stop it. He shouldn't have even entertained it. So, yeah, you can go check Nixon out. That interview, Frost Nixon, hell, he talks about it in that. That's a great one. They made a movie about it.
Let me get Adrian on. Adrian, welcome.
Thank you. How is everyone?
We're all groovy.
Hey.
I just have one thing to say.
Go ahead, dear.
I do not believe in nepotism.
There you go.
It
Bingo.
Causes a lot of problems.
We've been there before, haven't we, Adrian?
Yes, we have.
We've been there.
And
we don't
we've even
that.
Been there before with Mr. Trump, because right now Mr. Trump is a private citizen.
That's right.
He's a candidate for office, yes, but he's a private citizen. And we've been there with this nepotism from him before. You cannot deny that.
No. Brother-in-law and daughter.
Yep. Well, son-in-law.
Son-in-law.
Not brother-in-law, son-in-law, right. Yeah.
Yep.
I get all confused with the Biden.
Yeah, I get it that you all are in support of the party in which you support a party, and you don't necessarily see other viewpoints. It's like you have tunnel vision. You want to talk about how bad the Democrats are, but you never talk about the negative of the Republicans.
Because we're
you
perfect.
Want to talk about
black I know
killing.
I sure do.
You want to talk about how blacks are killing police, or not necessarily killing police, but firing on police, which the young man, I thought it was suicide by police, but that's what I thought he tried to do, because that was a dumb thing for him. But
who?
You can't.
That could be.
Yeah, it's like, do you have any type of solutions?
I got a solution.
Like, what?
Keep my kid away from them fools. And you made his point about what Republicans ain't doing. It's kind of hard to do that when you live in a city that's been Democrat for 74 years. That's quite that old.
Well,
yeah.
People have a right to vote the way they want to vote.
That's right. That's true.
And you may not like it, and that's all well and good. So what you can do is do the best you can to try to turn it around.
Well,
I
you
mean,
know, Adrian,
what?
We do that, but when we, you know, I'm black. I'm a black American, natural
uh-huh.
born. And when I tell other blacks that I vote for Donald Trump, it looks as if I got the plague. I'm giving names and words. I don't even know what the heck they mean. I look around. When they call me, I look behind me and upset. So I don't think the problem is with those who don't want to be like the norm. I think it's the norm that want to include people in their bunch who otherwise wouldn't want to be. I understand what you're saying. It's real close.
Well, like I said, you know, I've always told you all from the time I started talking on the show that I am not a Trump supporter. I don't like the man, but I have my personal reasons for that. I have no problem with if you want to support him. And so, you know, I'm not going to totally ostracize the Republican Party, but I don't feel like the Democrats should be totally ostracized either, because there are good people both sides of it. But
well, I agree with you on that.
If you got your mind just set on one party, you're not going to see these other people could be better than that party.
Let me say this. I have supported Democrats because we became issuecrats at that time. And I monetary have supported them. But guess what? And I can name names. One thing I'm good at, that is name names. Rodney Hubbard, Yaphet Alameen. When they come in, Betty Thomas, Democrats, when they come out and support issues like school choice. And see, I went to Missouri State Legislature committee hearing on cameras, body cams, and I tested a police wearing body cam. Oh, man, did I get ridiculed. And those politicians, those black politicians, like Rodney Hubbard, like I said, Jamila, Yaphet Alameen, they supported Betty Thomas. She had a bill. The Democrats came out and they just tore them apart because they are going against the grain.
Was it going against the grain, or was it because they didn't agree with the idea? So if one side is saying they want body cams,
well, let me
the
answer
other
that
side
one
is saying
question
they're
first.
Not needed.
Let me answer that one question first. That's a good question. That's a good question. Yes, they were going against the grain. Even the NAACP, the state branch, Lars Marr, there in southern Missouri, they went against the grain. I mean, it's ridiculous. I joined the NAACP when John Bardot was running for president in the city chapter of the NAACP. Me, my daughter, and my son-in-law joined. $35. Okay? He tied in the first runoff. And a lot of Muslims, Mosque 28 in St. Louis, joined the NAACP. And the next election, they voted for him, and he won. Man, you ought to – the Kwame Nkrumah out of Maryland and the rest of the staff done everything, and they did get him out of that position because he invited – and those Muslims in the city of St. Louis came and joined and supported him. See, nobody can tell me what these people do. I got letters where I rebutted what they say. You can see, I'll let you read the letters.
So they were against the body cam? No, your side was against the body cam.
They was against John Bardot. You can Google it.
I'm asking about the issue that y'all were arguing, though.
They was against school choice. They was against school choice.
Oh, okay.
And other things.
No, that's interesting. But just getting back to this conversation, yeah, both parties are raggedy. I think we all know that. I don't think anybody on this phone thinks that both parties, you know, are great and civic and the greatest Americans ever, and they're going to do great things for America. I don't think anybody thinks that. I think everybody knows there's individuals within each party that are good and are doing good work, and you want to support them and hope that they gain some committees and some power so they can get some things done.
But can I talk? Can I speak on that point? Just can you hold your thought real quick? Hold your thought. I mean, you can go,
we were having a conversation, and you took it to the.
Well, this is regarding the conversation. What you just said, you have the conversation. I'm gonna comment on what you just said as you engage in the conversation. Please. You said that we can agree that both parties. Well, that's not true. That's not true, because like I said, when it comes down to black, the vast majority has looked at. In the last election where you had 80% of those that voted for black. Some places,
As a matter of fact, where blacks stay, they ain't never seen a Republican. They never have had the privilege to occupy a district under Republican leadership. Never seen one. And as I mentioned, St. Louis, El Paso, Miami, they've been Democrat forever. St. Louis for at least 75 years since Tucker.
I think Detroit
I wasn't
was
even born.
Last Republican mayor was Kavanaugh back in 64 or 5, somewhere in there.
And I'm going to let you go, Rod. I'm just going to say this.
Was a Republican.
Who's that?
I'm going to say this. I understand what you're saying, but you are split in your presentation because you kind of scoot over the fact that these black areas ain't never seen a Republican in leadership. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, so when the Trump administration came in and they cut the minority outreach budget for the RNC, don't you think things like that have an effect? Things like that? And then the other question is, why are they presenting a platform that's so egregious that these people haven't voted for them in a generation? Now, let's flip the scenario. Let's go to these rural areas who have voted Republican for the past 5 generations. What's happened there? Opioid epidemic, joblessness, terrible areas where people basically are told once they're 18, if you got a chance to go to college and move out, get the hell out, go somewhere else, don't stay here.
Let me answer that
Those are rural Republican strongholds.
Let me answer
now
that question, Oz, and you can go on. I mean, you don't have, because you like to pile a plate up. I noticed that when
I'm
going through the buffet line.
I'm waiting on you while you're
killing
time.
You made mention about the platform. Well, what platform are you talking? What in the platform is it that you're talking about that the other groups don't like? What is it in Trump's platform that blacks don't like?
The tax cuts to the wealthy while the working class folks got a tax increase.
All right, hang on for a second. Hang on. Just stick with that. Stick with that. Because it's not true.
Well,
the overall tax rate in the United States is about 14.4%. And those that make about $46,000, they don't pay no taxes. The taxes are born by those in the upper income bracket who make up a smaller percentage of the taxes. And you know how you can look at that? You can look at usdebt.org, and it has a time machine. Wait a minute. Hang on for a second. I know you're anxious. That's why you get in trouble, Nod. You get in trouble now.
Hold on, everybody. Somebody's making noise in the background. It's hard to hear. Please mute your phone if you're not talking, please. Go ahead, Bianchi.
The people in the top income bracket, in top 10%, pay about 50% of the income taxes collected by the Internal Revenue Service. 10% of the people in that bracket of the income earners in the United States. So to say that they tax let the rich, that's just not true.
All right, you finished?
Another thing.
No, you wanted to stay on this one issue.
Donnie, my grandson wants to say hello.
Hey, Donnie, when you got a moment, get around to me, will you?
Oh, Sarge, okay.
Hey,
I want to speak to Quentin.
And you better call two more. Y'all need some more.
I'm about to knock this guy out.
Hold on.
Donnie,
go ahead.
My grandson wants to say hello to you. Go ahead.
Well, you bring him on.
Hello, fellas. How are y'all doing?
Hey, young man.
I'm going to say something to Naj. Naj, there's a clip of Al Sharpton with what to say.
No, we're not doing distractions.
Wait, wait, wait.
It's the guy.
Let Pionki stand on his own argument. Stop trying to do distractions. Let Pionki stand on his own argument.
Hold on. Go ahead, Quinn.
Pionki's a grown man. He's a grown man. He don't need y'all help.
Hey, Quinn, how you doing?
Well, whoever that is that's saying he's just, he's a grown man, that's right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But gosh,
think of it this way, okay?
No, brother. Let me respond to him.
There's
don't,
a clip
don't let,
of...
Don't let him get away with
wait
this.
Wait a minute.
Give me a minute.
Mike,
okay.
Hold on.
He was asked about his tax the rich policy, right? You know, and the question is, how much do you think we should be taxing the rich? And he gave an answer. It's something like 41%. All right. Well, what's the average tax on the rich nowadays? It's like 35% or 38%, something like that. So that whole tax the rich thing is a fallacy.
Okay, a fallacy that nobody introduced to this conversation but you. You brought that up to knock it down as an argument. You didn't hear me state that. So again, let me go back to Pionki. So Pionki said that no, he didn't actually do that. That's not true. I'm gonna send y'all to the New York Times, Washington Post. I even send y'all the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times of London, and y'all can read Trump's tax policy. Trump's tax policy gave a huge carve-out to the wealthy of America, and the tax cut for regular working-class folks would sunset in 2 years, which is what we saw in the past 2 years. That's why you have so many regular folks who normally would get a big fat check from the government at the end of the year for their taxes. This is why they owe now, because they changed the tables, meaning the withholding. So for 2 years during the Trump administration, people got bigger paychecks because they changed the withholding. The problem was at the end of the year, because your withholding changed, that meant your whole outlook changed. And instead of getting a check, you actually owed the government money.
Well, that's not
so,
true. That's
yeah,
not
so what Pionki is saying right now is not true. I just gave y'all five sources. Y'all can look up Trump's tax policy in black and white and read it.
Let me explain to you what happened, Naj. People was complaining that their tax return check was smaller than it was the years before. You know why? Because they had less money taken out each pay period. That's why. And this notion that because people
are
rich.
Did you just repeat what I just said? What?
Okay.
The other aspect, too, is Trump actually increased. He increased the standard deduction. So everybody that was used to having this complicated tax form where you're deducting mortgage interest and you're deducting all this crap to try to get this refund check, by increasing the standard deduction, it made taxes a hell of a lot more simple for the majority of Americans out there, and they actually got more money back as the result. They kept more money on their tax.
That didn't happen.
And then they got, and because of that standard deduction, that increase in standard deduction, it made their taxes a hell of a lot more simple. But they were up in arms because they're like, I can't deduct this anymore. I can't deduct that anymore. And it's like, why do you want to? People misunderstood what that meant.
No, it's not
you
true.
Know, I,
Lorianne,
you know,
I love
more
you,
people
but that's not true.
Were able to
not
to not have to deal with deductions. Their deductions would have been less than the increase that Trump gave with the standard deduction.
No, some people lost their mortgage deduction, and that was a problem. But as far as it being straightforward and understanding it, no, this wasn't an understanding problem. This was a problem of, like, y'all can Google this.
Okay.
Y'all can Google this. Y'all can look on Twitter. Y'all can look at any of these websites and see the preponderance of people who normally would get a refund now owing money and having to pay to the government because the withholding tables were changed. These are facts. This is not an opinion.
Knock, knock. Hello.
Mike is coming in now. Mike, go ahead. At least I think they were Mike. Sarge, is it somebody?
Yeah, no, that's me. I'm trying to knock, knock, get into the doorway
y'all
here.
Y'all better bring all the kings and all the kings.
Sarge,
don't tell me a lie.
Sarge is
okay, let's cut through the clutter here. Let's go to, I believe in Occam's razor, and I also believe in the Gordian knot. I believe in cutting it, like with a sword, like Alexander did, and just cutting straight through it rather than go through all this entanglement jack. The purpose of federal taxation is to pay for the federal budget. That is the purpose of it. Now, it's not the social policy or anything else or to satisfy some class warfare demand, as is so often done by the left. Pay the individual taxpayer's share of what the federal government spends. At least the federal tax is for that purpose. Now, let's examine that premise, because nothing else really matters. Now, we've got the most complete tax income or most complete tax information for the year 2021. And in the year 2021, the bottom 50% of taxpayers who paid income, tax income that was collected by the federal government, earned 10.4% of the total adjusted gross income of all taxpayers in the United States. They earned 10.4% of it, the bottom 50% of taxpayers. And they paid 2.3% of all federal income taxes collected. The top 1% earned 26.3% of all total adjusted gross income and paid 45.8% of all federal income taxes collected. So in short, the top 1% of taxpayers accounted for more income taxes paid than the bottom 90% of taxpayers combined. The top 1% of taxpayers paid more than $1 trillion in all income, federal income taxes collected, while the bottom 90% paid $531 billion. Now, let's just say for the sake of argument that we quadruple the tax rate paid by the top percent. So instead of paying $1 trillion, they're now paying $4 trillion. We accumulate that much in debt every 30 days. Okay, let's 10 times it. Let's say now we collect $10 trillion from the top 1%. Well, I got news for you. I got news for you. In 10 months, we'll still have another $10 trillion in debt. Stop with the class warfare arguments. They are not persuasive. The problem is the federal government spends too goddamn much money and taxes all of us too much, and some of us not at all.
Okay, you done? Because I want to.
Yeah, for now, I'd like to hear your response.
For now, that's enough. For now, that's enough. So notice how again I didn't bring up anything about class warfare. I didn't say anything about.
You didn't have
to.
I did.
No,
I did. Because I think that's what you're doing. That's why I brought it up.
I'm telling you, I'm not doing that. So let's.
Well, you are. I think you are.
I think you're avoiding the actual policy so that way you can have this straw man to beat
so,
up.
So then, the facts are straw men, eh?
Hey, man.
Facts now are straw men? You're not even addressing them. You're imputing my motives, and you're not arguing with the fact of what I said. That's what you just did.
Bullshit.
You impugn my motives. You did not dispute any of the facts
this
I just
bullshit.
Laid out.
Okay, hold on,
and
guys.
You can't. And the reason is because you can't. You can't.
Okay.
So we were having a conversation about Trump's tax policy. That's what
no,
we're
you're the one that did what you did, not me.
Why are you still talking?
Don't blame it on me. Don't be a Democrat. Don't blame it on
talking?
Me.
We were having a conversation about Trump's tax
policy. Yeah, you weren't being challenged either.
And in order to avoid that conversation, we've had two people try to bring
so
up
you're
the
saying the so what is the purpose of a tax cut, sir? What is the purpose of taxation?
Hold on now.
Y'all see the bullshit?
Is it to implement your ideas of class warfare? Is that what taxation is for?
He can't argue.
See, he's not
going to
address anything I said. He's going to fuel my motives and nothing else because he doesn't have an argument against them.
Okay, hold on. Everybody.
You're getting exposed on this one. Oh.
No, you're not. I got you in the corner, and you know it. That's why you're flailing.
Okay.
You're flailing
somebody
because you're in a corner. You're flailing.
Let him finish. Let Nas finish. Okay,
thank
Nas.
You, sir. I appreciate that, Donnie. You acting with some decorum.
Stop it. Stop buttering him up. Get your point.
So, again, I gave y'all the resources to look up Trump's tax policy. You can see that the tables were changed, and that effect on regular working class folks was people normally got a refund. Now they actually had to send a check out to the government. The conversation about taxing the wealthy is a whole different ballgame. If y'all want to have that conversation later, we can do that. Right now, we're talking about Trump's specific tax policy. And we can actually have live footage of Trump speaking before a gang of mega donors last week when he raised that couple billion in a few hours at that dinner, where he said to them directly, I saved you money on your taxes, and there should be a reward for that. This is Trump talking to those people. So he knows what he did. So the fact that these people are avoiding that part and talking about this class warfare, Bernie Sanders nonsense, that
well,
I
you did the
up,
class warfare thing.
Let
yes, you did.
Know, this should
okay.
let you know that they don't have an argument, and that's why they don't respond to what I actually said.
Let me say something,
out in there.
You
Donnie.
Said tax
let
cuts for the wealthy. You said that.
Sarge.
He's the one who brought up tax cuts
Sarge.
For the wealthy.
Sarge
canine. Tells
Sarge.
All the time, but here's the fact.
Speak to the policy.
Obama raised the tax rate to 39.6%.
You're on.
39.6%. Trump lowered them down in the 20s. That's a fact. He wanted to put them at 15, but the rest of the House would not go along with it. But Obama was 39.6%. And this stuff about people complaining about not getting no refund, well, you shouldn't let the federal government hold your money all year anyway. Put your money in your pocket. And then you got
well,
your present secretary.
The
hang on for
plan.
A second.
Thank
you have your present Treasury Secretary who wants to tax unrealized gains. What is unrealized gains? What is if you buy stock? No. If your house have increased in appreciation, they want to tax you right now before you even sell it. And you shouldn't be selling sales of a home shouldn't be taxed anyway.
So you're not going to talk Trump's tax policy?
Nice.
So you're still going to talk about
Nice.
This is cowardly. Nice. What's up, Ron?
Nice.
What's going on?
Riddle me this, okay? How come after the Trump's tax cuts that are so terrible and egregious, did the federal government actually now took in more money than before the tax cuts? Explain that to me.
Oh, yeah. People who normally got a refund actually had to pay and write a check.
Yeah, sure, Nas.
No, well, I mean,
you know, hey,
Nas.
Like, I gave you resources. Go read.
Okay.
Nas.
Hold on.
Nas.
Hold
I'm
on.
Glad. I am glad
I
that you.
Want y'all to
I am glad that
unarmed.
You believe.
I want y'all to arm y'all.
Nobody can understand anybody when we talk over each other.
I am so thoroughly glad and pleased that you believe every fucking thing that you read, because the thing is what you're reading does not tell the whole story. Have you ever heard of the? Have you?
Hey,
have you ever heard of the Loffer curve? Have you ever heard of the Loffer curve?
Yes.
Okay. Now we're way the hell out of the Loffer curve effects because we're taxing so much. The thing is we brought in more money because people were getting – more people were employed and working and paying taxes.
Well, that's not true.
We made money because we had more people out there earning and making money than what we did before. That's why we ended up with more money in the treasury than we had before. We had
one of the biggest deficits of all time during the Trump administration. We did not
because of COVID. Because of COVID spending. That's why.
Which is true.
And we had to rebuild.
You know another thing too. My grandson just filed his taxes.
I'll keep talking until
everybody shuts the fuck up. Bianchi, you're on.
My grandson filed his taxes here about a week ago, and he had a total deduction of over $6,000, less than seven, on work clothes and implementations for his job, going from job to another job, not going from job to home, but going from job to job to job. Clothes that have been called clothes for unusual temperatures and hazardous positions. When I came up in the tree, I could deduct all of that. His preparer said they just removed that form. We can't deduct that. That's under the Biden administration. That's real live stuff. That ain't no projections. That ain't no reading some book or whatsoever. That's real live experiences, Naj.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Criticize the Biden administration for mistakes that they make. I'm with you on that. I got no problem with that. My problem is y'all cover your eyes and act like y'all don't see the stuff when it's your side. So the stuff that I just listed for Trump, y'all have no rebuttal for because it's in black and white everywhere. This is not me reading some random blog. I'm giving y'all mainstream press because that's easier. But if y'all want better sources, we can do this all night. As far as Trump policy, that is what happened. And the brother who was just speaking, the thing he didn't know because he tried to say it was the same year, those changes didn't happen until 2 years later. So Trump put in the policy. It benefited the super wealthy, the majority of GOP donors, because that's the game. Of course, them donors didn't disagree.
Yeah.
They took that. They took
the ones who pay most of the taxes. The ones who pay most of the taxes.
Well, in theory.
No, in fact, they do. It is a matter of mathematics. It's not an opinion.
Hold on. You're talking about as far as just overall sum. Yes. Overall sum, yes. But when you start getting to the percentages and saying, okay, what percentage of their income do they pay in taxes, that's when we get into the tax accounting, the loophole finding, and their ability to move money across the world. Go look. I want y'all to take – I'll give y'all a homework assignment.
Hey,
go look at your
wait
boy.
Wait a minute.
Over.
Wait a minute.
Hold on, brothers. Hold on. I know you like to interrupt. I know that's your thing. Go look at Tim Cook over at Apple. They have – billions of dollars in Ireland that they don't want to bring back over here because they would have been taxed on them. So their con was to get into banking. That's why Apple Pay and, you know, the Apple credit card and all that, that's why they're in that now, because they had to figure out a way to get that money back over here without it being taxed. Goldman Sachs was actually facilitating it at first, but they've split up since then. But, yeah, that's how that situation goes. So, yeah, in theory, they pay the most because you're talking about overall number. But if you're talking about percentage, no, man, these people got tax accountants. They're the ones who send the donations to the people to legislate the policy, so they have the loopholes there. Now, if you can't see that, that's on you.
Now, what do you expect them to do with an effective tax rate of over 45%? That means half of their money would go to the federal government income taxes. How much money would they have to invest after that?
Naj.
That's a good point.
Naj,
45.
Naj,
that's a high number.
If you keep your money in the United States and your money is taxed at 45% and you have the ability to move your money offshore to where the taxes aren't even there, what are you going to do? Tell me. Are you going to keep your money in the United States? Yes or no?
As a patriotic citizen, I would pay my fare.
I have heard bullshit from the best of them, but that one takes the cake.
Really?
Yeah, but more than anything, you're asking me to hurt my own argument in the midst of the argument. Come on, brother. You know better.
Let me tell you something, Naj. Let me tell you something, Naj. A patriotic American would keep as much money away from the federal government as is possible practically because his investments in meaningful projects will yield a greater tax revenue to the federal government after he uses his own money productively to make more money than he would be if he just gave it to the federal government by not using legal tax avoidance policy. I submit to you that it is more patriotic to avoid paying taxes and invest the money in meaningful, efficient methods of investment than giving it to the federal government to waste.
Yeah, let me say
one thing, okay, Naj. Trump did not cut taxes. He did not cut. No, he did not. He did not. I can guarantee. I can guarantee. I can guarantee. I can guarantee you with every. Hey, Naj. Naj.
It's not hard to discover.
Hold on,
Naj. You want to know, Naj?
For a minute,
I can guarantee you that Trump did not, under any circumstances, lower taxes. He did not. He cannot. He would not.
Okay,
it is impossible.
Let's go into what Sarge.
It is impossible. Only Congress.
Are you going to repeat
only Congress can do that.
Okay.
We got
all
you.
Right.
We got you, brother. Hold on, Donnie. Let's go into what Sarge just said. What Sarge just said was really important. So I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks now. So I'll lay it out to you guys, and we'll see where we go from there. So back in the day, the Robert Barron period, where the Vanderbilts and the Carnegies and those guys, you know, the super wealthy at the time, one thing they had was a social obligation to the rest of Americans that the billionaires of today do not have. So when you're in a city and you see a Vanderbilt library or a Vanderbilt this or a Carnegie this, like you wonder, okay, where did that come from? Well, it was because they felt like so much out of the country, it was their patriotic duty to put something back in. Now, there was a little government, you know, coercion in there as well, but that was one thing that generation did. And when you speak about this generation today where Sarge said, you know, they'll take their money and they'll make more profits elsewhere, they're not necessarily putting that money back in, especially here, as far as investment in the United States. And this gets to the Adam Smith invisible hand stuff where you talk about, hey, at a certain point, if you're going to seek profits outside of your country, it's going to be a detriment to your country. But in a globalized economy, those profits are going to be so huge that those people can't turn them down. So just think about these two eras we're talking about and the behavior of the wealthier classes at the time. So I want to hear Sarge and everybody's response, but, yeah.
Guys, the same argument that Naj is making about the Trump tax cuts is the same argument that Democrats made about the Reagan tax cuts. Didn't tax enough. Didn't do this, didn't do that, you know. And it's like, okay, prove it. And my thing when I was stating that, when I was talking about that clip from what's his name, from it was a clip from on a show that John Stossel was doing where he had Al Sharpton on.
Al Sharpton.
Al Sharpton.
Al Sharpton on tax policy. He's not qualified.
He asked Al Sharpton how much taxes
should
the rich pay. How much should they pay? And Al Sharpton said something like 35, 40%, something like that.
you know, and it was his thing.
Come on, brother.
When he got told, he didn't know what to do when he got told that they actually paid like 42% at the time or whatever it was at the time.
Because and Al Sharpton is not an economist and doesn't know tax policy. Why the hell would we be caring about Al Sharpton's opinion on taxes?
Because no.
Wait a minute.
You're going to tax the rich.
Al Sharpton?
What?
Nash?
Hell, all you
Nash
do
is an economist? Nash is an economist now? On a tax?
The taxes that you pay, Nash, is divided by your net income. That tells you what your damn tax rate is. And let me ask you something else. You represent a portion of society whose education or academic is at the bottom of the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
So what did that equate to? Well, you ain't going
to
get no good paying job. But you got an abundant amount of non-income tax credits where you get money for money. You get money even if you ain't working.
Does Nash have a college degree?
They get money if they're not working, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, let me,
there's proposals out there.
That's why I referred you to the resources I listed, so you can look them up. You choose not to. That's on you.
Nice.
Okay, let's. Yeah, no, there's no.
You have a college degree.
The building. Hold on for a minute. We're dropping bombs in Israel from Iran or whatever. I'm just kind of looking this over.
Oh yeah, Donnie, yeah, it's going down over there.
Yeah. The Iron Dome is stopping most of them, but they're still coming in.
Yeah, the dome is working then. For the most part?
Yeah, with our assistance.
For the most part, but
before we
could
move on
be overwhelmed.
To the subject, if you don't mind, Donnie, real quick, before we change subjects, when it comes to talking all this talk about tax, my guest tomorrow night, Dave Champion, on my Lucid Libertarian show, Dave Champion's coming back for round four. He's Dr. Reality. He's written a book, Income Tax Shattering the Myths. And so all of this conversation about taxes, we're going to be having with him tomorrow, again, partially.
Good.
And, you know, so this is a really good segue and good conversation heading up into my show tomorrow night.
Good. Right. But look, I'd like to say this, Donnie, I'd like to say this. I don't care who the tax rate is for or against. The problem is not the tax rate for anybody, not even the bottom 50% that pay practically no federal income taxes. Again, the word I used was federal income tax, not Social Security taxes. Federal income taxes, who pay almost none, 2.3% of all the federal taxes. It's not even that's not the problem. It's not the problem that the rich don't pay enough, even though the effective tax rate is almost 50%. The problem is the federal government has too much debt. That's the problem. And that needs to be stopped. And in the meantime, all these people do is they play these class warfare tricks with us to make us think the problem is we're not taxing the rich enough, when if you confiscated all of their assets, you could run the federal government for 6 weeks if you took everything they own. It's ridiculous.
Again, nobody advanced that argument, and also nobody wants
for
to pay
off the debt. For all practical purposes, you do.
Well, let's speak to the reality.
Okay.
If you paid off the U.S. national debt tomorrow, you would start a recession that would lead into a damn depression. That's a lot of people's assets.
Is there an upper limit on our debt?
Who told you?
Nash. Okay, now let me ask you a question. Okay, let's say I agree with you that it's maybe not good to pay off all of the debt. Is there an upper limit? And what percentage of the gross domestic product should it be? I'd really like to know, because these people don't seem to see any limit whatsoever. If you have an idea, please enlighten me.
That's a good point. There is a limit to where at a certain point you start running into inflation and tanking your currency. So, yeah. Especially off the top of the head. I couldn't tell you.
Well, here's the problem I see, Nash. Not that I'm not agreeing with you, but that it's probably impossible, maybe not even a good idea, to completely pay off the debt. The problem is that the people who are running our government don't seem to even express an idea that there ought to be an upper limit to the debt. They say that, in fact, their leading economic advisors say that the more debt, a sovereign debt, a nation has, the better it is for the economy. So they literally don't see a limit. As far as they're concerned, it is endless, ad infinitum, into infinity. What is the upper limit?
This is the Alexander Hamilton versus Thomas Jefferson argument, where Jefferson said, solid money, don't borrow from anybody, get the hell out of here. And Hamilton said, we need credit to be able to make deals and do things with the European powers and expand our economy. This is that essential argument. But again, the point I made earlier about the two groups, the group from before who believed they had to invest in America because they had a responsibility to do so, and this group now who does not, I didn't hear anybody say anything after I laid that out. I spent so much time on that.
Well,
and
I couldn't
y'all
get
not to
I
say nothing. Y'all are so disappointed tonight.
I can't get an edge in what edgewise because I wanted to make a comment on that.
Oh,
you know,
go ahead.
all of those robber barons, you know, those wonderful robber barons that built the libraries and all of this type of stuff and universities and stuff like that, you know, they did not do that for the welfare of the community. Far from it. All they did was build a building, put their name on it, and sat back smugly and says, there, I am there in history forever.
Immortal.
Yes.
Okay, now let me tell you something about national debt. And there's a trivia question about the national debt. Who is the only president to help pay off the national debt and why? The answer to that is Andrew Jackson, and because he got away from the U.S. Bank.
That's right.
Right. So
what was the size of the economy at the time, brother?
I don't know what the size
of
the economy
was. I'm not asking that to be an asshole and expect you to give me a number.
I don't know what
I'm saying
the size
that to
of
think
the
about
economy
how small,
was, but I just
yeah,
know he
but,
did it.
Yeah, let's think about what a
well,
small player
let's,
we
let's,
were then as opposed to the global, you know, giant we are now.
Let's put it this way. At that time when Andrew Jackson did that, we were not the fucking sugar daddy of the world.
There you go.
Yeah, I agree
right.
with that. Okay. Somebody
and,
sent me
and,
to them.
And,
play
the,
and
the
we're,
other,
my
thing is, my
the other,
thing
the
is,
other
yeah.
aspect... The
We're
other
done.
Aspect of it is when are we as a nation going to call in our debt? The debt that other countries owe us for the money that we gave them. When is that going to happen?
Never. That's when it will happen.
Well,
never.
Well, it depends. If a country owes us money and we want them to vote with us in the UN for a certain vote, then we're going to use that leverage to make them vote. If
and
a country owes us money and we want to get our companies access to their markets, then they're going to have to allow it because
you,
they owe us money.
Sound,
it's not just this outstanding debt that we're not addressing. No, we use that, man. It's leverage.
You sound just like fucking Joe Biden.
Blackmail
well,
people.
I'll tell you what.
Joe
I wouldn't give
never
none
been
of them.
Coherent, and you know it.
I wouldn't
you know,
give none of them, including Israel. I would cut it all. It's stupid.
Yep.
No argument there.
Well, there's a lot of places
that,
to cut debt. But look, the biggest portion of the national debt is entitlement spending. There's no getting around it. Compared to foreign aid, the amount of debt we incur from entitlement spending is minuscule. The problem is entitlement spending, not even the national defense budget, which is one-third of the budget, approximately, comes anywhere near the money we're spending on entitlement. It's Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. That's where the money's being spent. That's where the debt is being incurred. And nobody wants to make any cuts on that because it's political suicide.
Right.
Yeah, so those obligations are going to be there. We're going to have to pay those no matter what. And Social Security would be solvent if we didn't keep dipping in the kitty. Since the Vietnam War, we've been dipping into that money. We made it legal.
I agree with you on that one, Notch.
Yeah.
agree with you on that.
I agree there, too.
Medicare, the employee pays for themselves.
Now,
hell, a lot of people don't even live long enough to draw it.
I have a very heady question for everybody here. Over the last month or so, we've talked about repealing the Federal Reserve Act, basically getting rid of the Fed. If we got rid of the Fed, could we at some point pay out our national debt, like what happened with Andrew Jackson?
Okay, so let's explore that. Let's say China bought some security bonds from us. Japan bought some security bonds from us. Germany bought some security bonds from us. If you paid off the debt and ruined the maturity of those bonds and those people getting paid, they wouldn't invest with us anymore. They would see the U.S. as a problem. The reason that all these countries are always trying to invest in America is because they have a belief that America will still be standing in 100 years and the markets will still be sustained. That's why they invest. So when you say stuff like pay it off, think about what you're doing. How much money would they lose tomorrow if you paid that stuff off? Not to mention, like Pianki, I guess, who is interested in the stock market and has invested some into a portfolio. If you made it to where that stuff was paid off before it all matured, then they took a loss on every one of those deals. Mm-hmm. Nobody would want to invest anymore.
Well, that wasn't my question. My question was about the Federal Reserve. You know, my question was, what happens if we actually do get rid of the Fed?
Well, I don't know. Well, you know what, Mike? I don't know if we necessarily need to get rid of the Fed now because I've been thinking this through. Because if you get rid of the Fed and the idea of fractional reserve banking and currency, that means the economy is going to shrink like an imploding star. I don't know if that would be necessarily good. It would have to certainly be gradually implemented. But I think at the very least, what we could do is make it federally accountable. Right now, it's a private institution. The only influence the federal government has on it is the appointment of the Fed chairman. That's it. It's a private institution. Yeah. Yet it has this enormous effect on the economy, and the people have no say-so in it. But it's clear now we just cannot get rid of it at once without destroying the economy because the banks are utterly dependent on fractional reserve currency. So what are we to do? That is an argument I'm willing to have. I'd like to hear the solutions, but I do know something's got to be done about the Fed. It can't keep going on the way that it is.
Now Sarge, that's a great point by you, but the only question there is if you're going to do that, you realize Joe Biden in office right now, he would be able to turn the spigot right before the election to influence how people think about the economy. So that's why you kind of keep those things separate, where that's a private entity and you don't want government control over it because, hell, any president without any morals, they could basically rig the economy to their favor right before election time.
I thought of that too. You're right.
Wait a minute. Didn't Biden already do that?
He can't. He wishes he could. He can't.
Yeah, he did. He did. He most certainly did. He's buying fucking students' votes by paying off their loans for them with your money.
Illegally, I might add, unconstitutional.
I paid for my kids' education, but the U.S. Treasury can do everything the feds do without having to pay the interest.
Hello, before you're all done, I gotta let you know, man. Your dad's been given blowjobs in the parking lot at the truck stop for $15 USD, and they're terrible. It's terrible. Like he's fucking Keith or hitting my dick and shit. Like it's bad.
We've got Joseph Gibson. And 303, I don't know who you are.
I had to get down on my knees and show him how a real man sucks a dick.
Right. Come on, Ron. Crazy bastard.
Oh, you guys think it's fine. Never mind. Like,
Am I on here?
Never mind.
It's been one of them nights. Okay, Lori-Ann, tell us about your show again tomorrow night.
Thank you. Yeah, everybody that's on right now is welcome to tune in tomorrow night. Lucid Libertarian with Lori-Ann right here on Blog Talk Radio, 6 p.m. Pacific and 9 p.m. Eastern. Special guest Dave Champion, a.k.a. Dr. Reality, is coming back on my show for the fourth time as my special guest. We will talk about the scam that is the income tax. We're going to talk about some gun control stuff and also the Oregon reversal of the decriminalization of drugs and who knows what else. So it should be a pretty informative and action-packed show. I do plan on taking some callers for comments and questions during the last half hour or so. So definitely tune in. Thanks, Dad.
All right. Hey, you're welcome. I'm sorry I missed last night's show, you guys, Robert and Lori-Ann, because our power was out. We almost froze to death. I just want you to know that. But we were thinking of you.
Oh. What was your temperature?
It was about, it was cold, put it that way. I don't know what the hell the temperature was. I know I was cold. Joseph.
Did Otis help keep you warm?
Hell no. He and the cat were under the blankets together. They finally made friends last night. Joseph, are you on tonight? 7 o'clock, right?
Yeah, all right. Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, Restoring Our Republic. And tonight, met a good guy. Actually, he spoke at the United Nations, actually. He's worked in the swamp for many years, so he's going to start becoming a part of my show. I met him actually a couple months ago, but he came on tonight. We did a show earlier, so... got a lot of interesting things to say, and we're going to be aligning ourselves with probably starting grassroots here, trying to change the system and fighting against the system. So I guess you got to change your heart. So, but you guys are wrong on how the Fed works anyway, so when we get back to that conversation.
Oh, okay. Well.
I'm definitely not having that convo with you. We can have another conversation, but not that one. We'll never be able to have one on that. But, Bianchi, my cousin, Victor Scott, plays for your Cardinals, man. So you need to buy a jersey and support that young man. He's a rookie on the Cardinals this year.
Great. Outstanding. That's awesome.
Donnie?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Might I suggest another topic while it's still somewhat topical, and I think it bears a lot on what we regularly complain about on this show?
Please.
Thank you. And that topic is what we constantly complain about with regard to the insanity, the cultural insanity of wokeism and its antecedents and origins. In the passing of Orenthal James Simpson, one of the greatest running backs in the NFL and one of the greatest collegiate athletes in history, gives us an opportunity to reflect on its origins, because believe me, a great deal of it started with that sensational murder trial. And I don't want to really rehash the details of the murder trial, but what it provided an opportunity for the cultural Marxists to do is to bring about an intersection of the historical injustices done to black men, particularly when they were wrongfully accused of crimes, particularly the murder of white women. And what they were able to do is install this new idea of identity and how it interposes with analyzing objective fact and law. In other words, critical race theory, to some extent, was being instituted in the O.J. Simpson trial, and all the things we see now about identity being relevant to how you observe fact, truth, and the law was at play in the O.J. Simpson trial. As far as I'm concerned, that is the beginning of modern-day wokeism, and it reached its apotheosis with the George Floyd situation, and it was completed then. And ever since then, we've seen it in all its various insane, lunatic, grotesque, and distorted forms. But O.J. Simpson was the start of it. I don't necessarily want to rehash the details of the case, although I suppose people will do that, and that's okay too, I guess. But I'd really rather discuss the cultural impact, because those impacts are infinitely greater lasting and infinitely more deleterious to the body politic and the civil comity of the people of the United States.
That's all funded by money.
All that's funded by money and to divide the people and conquer, okay? It's the root cause. What did Rockefeller say? What was the greatest achievement? Hey, we got, you know, the women's rights movement. You know, hey, let's get them involved so we can tax them too, you know? And that's what they did, break up the American family.
But here's the thing, though. O.J. trial, the O.J. trial, because it was so focused, so singular, and it had an opportunity where people had to bring up these issues in an atmosphere of great drama. The whole nation was fixated on it. And the arguments made in court had to do with the end. Remember, before O.J. Simpson, people could fairly regularly use the N word, the N-I-G-G-E-R word, in context, in conversation, and it could do it reasonably, and it wasn't that much restriction on who could use it when. After the O.J. trial, all of a sudden, that word became like some sort of sacred cow, or some sort of, it was the beginning of censorship and cancellation. And it all came out when F. Lee Bailey put Mark Furman on the stand and asked him if he'd ever used the N-word in any context. And he didn't say that he'd used it in a screenplay he had written for Hollywood. And that was the beginning of that particular aspect of wokeism. And believe me, it's affected us all ever since.
Well, hold on, man.
All right.
I got a different perspective on that trial. The biggest tragedy I can think of, besides Nicole Brown Simpson and I can't think of the Ron Goldman actually losing their life. The other tragedy there is Johnny Cochran, man. Johnny Cochran is one of the greatest legal minds in American history. And because of that farce and circus of a trial, he's being remembered as the guy who got O.J. off, as opposed to the guy who legitimately convicted the LAPD of things they were guilty of, got Geronimo Pratt out of prison when he was locked up on a trumped-up charge for something that he was like a whole city away from, and they still charged him with the crime. Like, Johnny Cochran did some great things in this world, man. And the fact that his memory is now just the O.J. Simpson trial, like, that is some shameful stuff, man. But that's what happens.
What legal maneuvers did Johnny Cochran use throughout his career that were so brilliant to legal scholars?
Well, in L.A., you can kind of look into this. Just look up his scandal versus the LAPD and look up Geronimo Pratt. Those two cases.
Yeah, but by his name, though. By his name and race, he was able to achieve that. By social issues,
not by legal maneuvers or constitutional law. No, by his legal brilliance, because there were people who brought cases before and they lost. The reason Johnny kept winning is because he was a great legal mind. And I refer you to something else, which is his lasting legacy, the NFL's Rooney Rule. They were scared that Johnny Cochran was going to bring a lawsuit forward against him, and that's when the family from the Steelers introduced the Rooney Rule to stop Johnny Cochran from bringing on some type of lawsuit. So, no, Johnny Cochran is a really deep dude. Look into his past, look into some of those cases, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But, again, it doesn't matter because people only remember him from that O.J.
I don't think Johnny Cochran did any particularly innovative, brilliant legal strategizing, but I do think he was brilliant in this respect. He could read a room, and he knew how to appeal to the room that he was speaking to. Now, I don't see anything particularly innovative about his legal strategies. I mean, he was more than just competent. He was a skilled lawyer, but he was best at reading the room. He knew his audience, and he knew what he had to say to appeal to it and win it over to his side. Now, in that respect, I might agree with you. I didn't see any particularly brilliant legal strategizing that was groundbreaking. I didn't.
Well, he beat
can't
up
really
the
point
LAPD,
anything.
So, Sarge, of course you
well,
know.
Yeah, well, wait a minute. I'll tell you what he did with the O.J. trial. Now, look, the LAPD didn't do any great atrocities in the O.J. Simpson. What they did was they violated their own procedures, particularly with regard to chain of custody and evidence keeping. They just blew that completely.
They had procedures in place that would prevent it. Ironically, it was Mark Furman who tried to tell Van Adder and his team that they weren't collecting the evidence properly, and they were getting in trouble as a result of it. They didn't listen to him, and guess what? The evidence was impeached on the stand. That was problematic for the LAPD. But as far as committing some great big atrocities, no. They were just bumbling and incompetent. And yes, Johnny Cochran took advantage of it, and he did a good job. But let me say this. Let me say this before, and then I'll listen to what you have to say in response to that. If you set aside all of the evidence that was impeached, like Mark Furman's testimony, because he appeared to have perjured himself about the N-word, and you get rid of the evidence that was improperly collected at the scene, you exclude that because now it's been impeached. It's not reliable to consider for purposes of guilt of O.J. Simpson. But if you leave what was left that was uncontroverted, there was more than enough circumstantial evidence to convict O.J. Simpson of those two murders.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Effley Bailey and two other lawyers said that Cochran was one of the best legal minds in the United States. And that's a pretty good compliment.
Well, one of the other lawyers that were on OJ's team didn't get his name recognized as much until such times as his fucking wife and daughters went on TV in their reality show, keeping
Robert
up with the Kardashians.
Yeah, right? Robert Kardashian. Yeah, here.
Social issues. There you go.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, hey, you got to give it that much, man. The Kardashians were made because of the O.J. Simpson trial.
That's right. They sure were. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, never forget Kato Kaelin. Like, we had a whole cast of characters, man. That stuff held our attention for a long time. That trial. And like you said, if all that evidence was introduced, O.J. probably would have been found guilty. It is what it is. But never forget, though, O.J. Simpson played in the 70s. He didn't have the money to afford a legal team like that. He got that legal team from his friends at USC and in friends in corporate America who loved O.J. because he was a white man's black man. They loved him for O.J.
He was the first player to rush for 2,000 yards, and don't forget he did that in 14 games. 14 games.
Man, he was one of the greatest running backs ever. There's no taking that away from the man. I mean, that's a damn shame that he's going to be remembered more for his infamy than his fame as one of the greatest athletes in professional sports history. But that's the way it is. That's just how it's going to go down.
How about this? My question is this. Where is he going to spend eternity?
Well, I'm sure he knows by now. He doesn't know.
I'm sure he's with John McCain somewhere in the bushes.
Donnie, did you say that about John McCain? What?
Did I say
that? Wait a minute. Guys, look, if you have the time to devote to it, here's what I'd like to recommend to you to learn everything I think there is to know that's publicly available and some that isn't about the O.J. Simpson affair. That is the this is an outfit I do not like at all. I do not like ESPN. They woke, and you can almost predict what they're going to say about any issue. But when it came to doing a documentary on O.J. Simpson, they did one called O.J. Made in America. It is a 7-hour documentary, and it is superb. It has footage, interviews with witnesses and everything else that are unique. The footage is incredible. The amount of footage and everything that's connected by the O.J. is just beyond belief. The interviews they got are superb. The in-depth analysis into the facts of the case and the evidence and everything is just almost peerless. It is balanced. And I swear, and the two interviews in that documentary that really stood out to me was one that they had with a juror named Bess. And I can't think of the other juror's name. But the interviewer asked Bess, one of the jurors who acquitted O.J. Simpson, and they asked her, was this, in fact, a payback for Rodney King and other historic injustices against black people by the LAPD? And she admitted that it was. She admitted that it was. And so did another juror. So really, so these jurors, again, this is years after, she admit this years after the trial, but she said that many of the other jurors all came to the conclusion that they need to send a message to LAPD and to the entire United States about their displeasure at the injustices done to black men. It was literally jury nullification of the first rank.
Yeah,
and that is something else
Ezra
we can take from.
Eldman. No, no, sorry, that's a good recommendation. The guy's name is Ezra Eldman. He made the documentary. And it's on YouTube now for free if y'all want to find it.
Yeah, it's
Made in America. Yep, you can get it on YouTube, man.
I couldn't recommend it more highly. If you really want to go in depth in the OJ thing, it covers everything: the trial, OJ's background, his relationship with Cohen Sutherland, the LAPD, the history of the LAPD and black people, and from its inception until the OJ trial. Everything's covered there. I mean, it's comprehensive.
Sarah, what you said just a few minutes ago, there was a lady on CNN that said basically the same thing you just said. That I'm trying to find the tape.
But remember my point, but Donnie, remember the point I just made a little while ago. The O.J. Simpson trial was about the intersection of identity and identity as a predictor of the way you're supposed to analyze objective fact and law. That was what was critical about O.J. We cannot underemphasize this. No, I'm not. Because the fact that those jurors said what they said is an indication that what I said is true. In other words, it didn't have any. When you say you're sending a message with a jury verdict, and that is the predominant thing about your verdict, you are saying that the facts, the evidence, and the law don't matter as much. You're literally saying that. And that's what what the jurors were saying in their verdict. And that is what wokeism, critical race theory, and everything else is all about.
Oh, man. All right.
It's race specific. It's race specific in its scope.
Yeah, so
everything about it.
That's one juror.
Not a bit.
Wait, Nas. Hold on just for a second, guys. Nas, tell me your cousin's name again because I'm a baseball fan, so I can keep an eye on him.
Victor Scott plays for the Cardinals, man.
Okay.
He's fast guy, steals bases. This is first year. He started the season on the roster. I don't know if he might get sent down later, but right now he's starting, man. We'll see.
Outstanding. All right, buddy. I'm a baseball fan. I hate the Cardinals, but hey, but we beat them in 68. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Yes, sir. But to the OJ case though, before we go far away from that. Well, if you want to go ahead. Whoever that was, if you want to go ahead.
No, you had it. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, don't forget, man. Like as crazy as this case was, this is the invention of court TV, as an institution, to where now we watch cases all the time. Think about Casey Anthony and some of these other high-profile cases that we've seen. So now that's a regular part of programming. Then the other part with the OJ case is we got to talk about the family. The biggest problem with her and him was OJ, and he's been accused of this while he was at USC, domestic violence. He was beating the hell out of her all of the time, and the family was sending her back to him. Why? Because he was paying the family's bills. That's the part that people don't talk about. The Nicole Brown Simpson family, OJ was paying for all of those people's bills, and that's why they were looking the other way as he was constantly sending her, you know, to ICU and to the emergency room because he was beating her up all of the time. OJ, yeah, man.
And, guys, here's the deal. Ron Goldman. And I've heard this theory. The reason why Ron Goldman got killed, you know, is because, one, he went back. The reason why he was going to her house was to basically have sex with her. And OJ had given her a car. He had given her a car. A Porsche or something, and he saw Ron Goldman driving that Porsche,
and bang, there you go.
No, I never heard that one, but it doesn't matter. They're dead.
We got 40,000 troops over in Iraq. I mean, excuse me, in Kuwait right now, and they're getting ready right now to probably launch an attack against Iran. So we'll probably be in World War III by next week.
Yeah, it's very.
You're awful optimistic there.
Yeah, 40,000 troops ain't gonna do the job.
40,000 troops right now in Kuwait that are on red alert right now.
40,000
aircraft right now to target in Iran. So
they're not going to invade with 40,000 troops.
They don't invade the war, Sarge. We're not in Vietnam anymore.
They're not going to invade with 40,000 troops.
They'll use aircraft, sorties, and proxies and drones.
Hold on one second. Tell them what the reality was when we did the war games of us versus Iran in an invasion. Sarge knows it. So that's what I'm saying.
The Pentagon has already concluded how many troops it would take to make a successful invasion of Iran, and that was like three or four years ago.
We're not invading Iran. They're going to target military installations in Iran.
Well, wait a minute. But that's the word you use. You use the word invaded Iran.
We have 40,000 troops that are on red alert, I said.
All right. I agree with you. I'm just saying 40,000 is not enough to invade Iran. They're not going to do it with 40,000
troops. When they say they have 40, Sarge, they usually have 120 then. Okay?
That wouldn't be enough.
My bad. I thought he was saying invade, so I've seen that war game thing
I heard him say it.
I read it, so that's why I brought it up.
I said invade.
Well,
that's what you wanted to hear.
Y'all can make mistakes all night. I can't make a mistake, goddamn.
But I'm just saying 120,000 wouldn't be enough. 120,000 wouldn't be enough.
Okay.
One at a time. Listen, Joseph, you are wrong in your prediction that we'll be in World War III by next week. We're not going to be in World War III next week. We are already there.
How do you figure that?
It's the lull before the storm.
Let me come with a different perspective. I think at a certain point we drop Israel as a junior partner because they're starting to get more expensive than their worth.
We will abandon Israel. We will. Yes, we will. You're absolutely correct. That's what the Bible says.
Yes, we will. But here's the deal. There's a clip with from Fox News before they fired before Tucker Carlson, and he had Glenn Beck on that, and he said, and this was in January or December, and he said by the end of 2024, we will be at war with Russia, with Iran, and with China.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And that's what's on the horizon.
China's
folks.
Not going to step in on anybody's behalf. China's going to sit
back. Oh yes, they will.
China is not an ally that's going to show up to fight for you. I promise.
They're allied with Russia.
The point was, I think China
will sit back and pick up the pieces.
China's going to take the opportunity of us being going to possibly attack Iran to go and take Taiwan.
Yep.
But just FYI for your information, the Pentagon has already war gamed this, and I know they probably tend to overestimate the amount of troops they would need because it's better to overestimate than to underestimate. But they estimated 1.6 million troops that include combat and logistical support troops to invade and occupy any significant portion of Iran.
We're not going to invade and occupy them, Sarge. That's not the goal. We can't do that. They're not going to do that.
They have an army, too, though. Here's the problem. They have an army, too, and they can launch it. Now, if you think we have enough ordnance
to significantly degrade that army before it can come across the border and do what it intends to do, that's another kettle of fish. It might come to the need
to
invade at least a portion of Iran in order to prevent that army from coming across the border.
Yes, we have troops in it. Where do we have troops now? We have them in Kuwait. We have them in Saudi Arabia.
Yemen.
We have them in, yeah, okay. So they're already, the troop buildup.
But there's
not
enough. 40,000 is nowhere near adequate. I know it isn't.
How do you know?
First of all, they're not all combat troops. Because I know how big the total armed forces for every on active duty, everywhere in the world, including the Navy and the Air Force, I'm not talking about just the Army, is less than 1 million personnel. Less than 1 million. That's all of them.
It's not just our troops. They got the UK. They got German.
Oh,
they got France.
They're really going to be committed to this.
Yeah.
All right. We can count on them providing whole divisions for us. We'd be lucky if we get a brigade or two from Great Britain and Germany. Two or three brigades.
If it's a regional war in the Middle East, yes, they will. They will.
I'm not confident at all.
Sarge, this is where
Germany,
it's all going down.
I don't believe Germany has the will. I don't believe Germany has the will for that. I just don't. Neither does the United Kingdom.
This is where it's all going down, right here in the Middle East.
It could
be. Going down.
I just don't believe they have the will for it. I don't think they will do it. I just don't.
Well,
hey, Joe,
they don't even want to contribute their fair share to NATO.
Yep.
That would be correct.
They're notoriously
savers. We know that. They don't like to spend. But the other part is, if they get drawn into this, that makes them completely dependent on us for oil and gas, because then Russia would cut them out.
Damn right.
Do they make that decision?
And the natural gas pipeline that runs from Russia to Europe will be severed, and that is what a lot of it's about also. So there's a lot going on, because the largest deposits of natural gas was discovered a few years ago off the coast of Gaza, and that's what this is all about.
No. I just don't have it. I'm not very confident as things stand right now for any significant military action against Iran. Some pinprick raids with a few cruise missiles, yeah. Some fighter bomber strikes, yeah. Maybe even a strategic bomber strike or two, but not more than that.
Well, they launched 500 tonight. Iran launched 500 tonight, drones and cruise missiles.
That's Iran. They're determined. They got skin in the game.
They did that. They launched that stuff 7.5 hours ago.
That's right.
But that was in retaliation for the Israelis blowing up their embassy in Damascus. So.
How did they get armed up?
They were always armed. Let's not confuse things. They didn't have nukes, but they were armed. The problem was your boy Joe Biden can't keep Israel on a leash. Netanyahu is thumbing his nose at Biden.
I'd just like to remind you guys that we blew up the Chinese embassy in Serbia, in case you all forgot. Remember, we blew up the Chinese embassy in Serbia? And we didn't mean to do that. It was an accident. It happened. It's war.
Yep.
Shit like that always
happens. You think this was an accident?
Wait a minute, Nas. United States Army Air Force bombed Switzerland 70 times in World War II. They killed 329 Swiss civilians in one bombing raid and wiped out the town. The United States had to pay $40 million in reparations to the Swiss after the war. It happens. We didn't mean to bomb Switzerland.
Do you think, I'm not asking about us, do you think the Israelis accidentally bombed that?
I don't know if they did or not. I'm saying they are saying that they didn't. I have no way of proving that they did or didn't. They might have bombed it deliberately. They might not have. I don't know. But I know one thing. We have bombed embassies by mistake.
Israel has always done what it said it's going to do. If it says it's going to attack somebody, it's going to. I'm going to tell you that right now. And they said they crossed the red line tonight, and they will respond with full military capability. That's what it says. And Biden said that all our military resources are at their disposal. That's what he said.
boy. And I'm, that really gives me confidence. Now,
Trump
Joe
said
Biden's
Trump said it, though. You'd be like, yeah. Trump said it, though. Right?
I know I would. I don't want it.
Democrat
look,
crap coming.
Wait a minute. But Joe, haven't I said since this thing started on October 7th, I do not want the United States involved in a ground war in the Middle East. I don't care who's in charge of it. That's what bothered
well,
me about this. That's why I wanted the Israelis to get this shit over with quick so it wouldn't be dragged out and we wouldn't get caught up in it. Now it looks like
they
had it that way.
Sarge, how could they get when Iran's got their proxies all over the region launching at Israel all the time?
Look, here's what I'm saying. Joe Biden didn't help things by trying to play both sides off against the middle, telling Israel they needed to do restraint and all this other crap. Hey, when you got your enemy, on the ropes, you don't give them a respite. You don't give them a ceasefire. You be violent.
Okay,
you push, and you kill
him. When Biden,
he didn't help. He didn't help with things doing that.
Okay. But now when he makes a statement saying he's going to do this, we got to support that. We have to back that up. We can't say, oh, Republican, Democrat, you know, because if Trump said it, we all be like, yeah, you know.
I got to admit, you know, now when you say things like that, I can't argue with you too much. We've got defense agreements with Israel. We either live up to them or we don't. And the problem is that if we live up to them, we can't afford the consequences of that right now. Yes, we're going to have to do what we have to do, given what we've committed ourselves to. But damn it, that doesn't mean I got to like it. And I'll tell you one thing. If this was Donald Trump, I don't believe this would be happening. I really don't. It wouldn't be here. It wouldn't have got to this
point. That's irrelevant, though. That doesn't matter.
I agree. But I just thought I know it doesn't relevant to the actual matter on the ground. But I got to say it because this goddamn administration is so fucking inept.
Well,
they don't care about us.
Well, he should have campaigned harder in 2020.
We did. They stole it. They got new elections. You see the new information coming out of Georgia from the Georgia State Elections Board? Not from the conspiracy theorists, from the Georgia State Election Board, talking about errors in the machine recount and the audits. And they're having a meeting about it on May 7th.
Yeah, just last week I got 75 extra votes tallied onto my election. Where were those votes at?
Did you see it? No, I'm just asking. Have you seen this latest information from the Georgia State Elections Board?
No, I haven't. But I think you guys.
Well, you need to look it up. You need to look it up.
Election denial reunion. Y'all said come together.
See?
With some balloons.
See how he had to change the subject?
It's rigged.
See what he just did there? You see what he just did there? He had to change the subject.
Nolan and it was rigged. It was both.
He had to change the subject because he knows that election was funky, and the evidence is more and more evidence is coming out all the time.
Yep. I mean, I just told you I got 75 more votes last week. My election was a month ago. Where'd they come from? Where did those votes come from?
That was for me, Joe. You're welcome.
Well, maybe. But point being, though, where were they?
Oh, and you got 75 of them, did you? You got 75 votes for Joe, did you? That tells me all I need to know right there.
It shows you that the system is corrupt. It shows you, though. That's right there. I mean, it's just it's wrong. It's broken.
I agree. Yeah. The system is broken, so you guys should stay home at the next election. Stay home. It's broken.
I'll be damned if I do it. I'm going to be a poll watcher. I'm going to be watching like a hawk. I'm not staying home. I'll be damned if I do.
Yep.
I've already signed up. I'm going to be a poll watcher. I'm going to be watching like I was a poll watcher in 2022. I didn't see no shenanigans. Hey, it was Rockdale County. They looked pretty good to me at the one place I was watching. I was only watching one place, and I didn't see anything suspicious in the drop boxes. So I got no complaints. I'm not going to make something up. I guarantee you that this report that I just cited to you, Naj, they said the locus of it is Fulton County.
If we go into a big scenario like that, a war, are you prepared to be in the situation you're in right now with your family? Are you prepared? Because things are going to change.
Oh, I bet so.
And Sarge, this is the crux
What you just talked about is the crux of the Fannie Willis case. They're trying to prove a negative that he didn't believe that the election was stolen or rigged. And this is evidence that it was.
Well, I'm just saying, if that guy can rig an election while Trump is the sitting president, if he's the sitting president, it's going to be rigged more. So you guys should stay home.
I didn't say it was Biden that did it. I have no direct evidence of Biden's involvement. I believe he probably knew of it. I believe people did it on his behalf. I'm not saying he was the engineer behind it. I'm saying it was done. It was done by officials at either local, state, or even federal levels, and that evidence is coming to light.
And Naj. Biden
I'm
flat
just
out
bullshit,
said,
man. Don't pay no attention to me, man. I'm just fucking with you right now.
I know you are. We're gonna cite the facts, though. We're gonna cite the facts of what we know.
And guys, Naj and Sarge, Biden flat out said this. He says, quote, "We have the greatest election stealing apparatus ever." End quote. He said,
I would say be careful of deep fakes and disinformation on the internet. No, he hasn't said that.
Wait a minute.
Come on, man.
He said that just like he said, "Oh, I got the guy fired, son of a bitch. I got him fired." He said that.
Well, that one is real. Yeah, that one is real. But the other one you just said, man, come on, brother.
Naj, he did say that. I will play the video for you. He said it. He said, "We have the greatest fraud organization in the history of American politics." He said it. Now, I know he's a saddled, senile bastard. He might not have meant that. But don't tell me he didn't say it, because he did. I'll play it for you.
Yeah, he did say it, but it's claimed that he misspoke, you know, like.
That's what they said,
does,
right. They
know?
Said he made a mistake. But he said it, Naj. Don't deny that he said it. Just like Trump
yeah,
and the dictator remark. Remember the dictator on day one? You guys can't let that go, can you?
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Biden said it, and it was one of his perfectly clear clarity moments in his dementia.
Right on.
Let's go, Dementia Joe. Let's go, Dementia Joe. Let's go.
I can't even
be enthusiastic when I'm trying to make it.
Fuck Joe Biden.
I can't do it.
Fuck Joe Biden. Fuck Joe Biden.
I can't even commit to that. But anyway, we'll see, man. Good luck.
Yeah,
it was good talking with y'all tonight.
Fannie Willis is in serious trouble. Oh, she thinks she's not.
Naj, you're leaving us. Have a good night. Maybe I'll see you tomorrow on my show.
Okay, looking forward to the talk show. I can't wait to hear it.
Did anybody watch the gold prices on the rise there, showing that the banks are on the verge of the collapse? Gold prices are skyrocketing. You know what that means?
That's war news, that's called.
Oh,
it,
yeah,
probably.
Less faith in the dollar. Everybody's securing their funds with gold. Yeah,
the war
gold
news.
Like 23-something? What's the gold price today? $2,360 per ounce.
Yep.
And I remember when it hit 1,800 and everybody was like, holy God, you know, like they couldn't believe it. Now it's damn near close to $2,400 an ounce.
Warning.
Mm-hmm. That means our dollar isn't worth crap.
Yep. Yep.
It hasn't been worth crap for many years.
It hasn't been worth crap since Nixon took us off gold standard.
Well, it's coming.
Here's an interesting factoid. The Central Bank of Turkey was the largest buyer of gold as of March. Hmm. Well, Turkey's buying up a shitload of gold right now. Interesting. China, Poland, and Singapore led the central bank gold purchases in 2023. That can't be an accident.
Nope. Nope, it isn't. And China is not only getting the gold, but they've been buying up things like diamond mines and gold mines and all kinds of shit, you know, like that. So, yeah, cornering the market. But I want to go back to the whole thing about Iran and then throwing the missiles, right? How were they able to arm up? All right.
Fuck Joe Biden.
That's right. Joe Biden got us back in the goddamn Iran deal, gave them all those billions of dollars, and what they do, they spend it on arms and also terrorists and things of that nature. But yeah, that's one of the ways they did it. They armed up. Fuck Joe Biden. Fuck him. I know one person that don't want to fuck him, and that's Dr. Jill. But anyway.
Maybe that's why he's so fucking cranky.
Yeah, really?
Oh, boy.
But anyway, man, this was an interesting show. Monetary policy and all, you know.
Yes, it was.
Yep. The old
tomorrow night's going to be a good show.
But Sarge, I mean, I look at what's happening with Fannie Willis, and she is fucked, and that's putting it lightly. I mean, she's going to get if the state people don't get her, the feds will. I think.
Yeah. Well. She's not only fucked, she's had the train run on her ass, goddammit. I say, yeah. She damn sure ought to be.
and it's not a given. She's got an election to win, if possible, you know. And it's not a given that she's going to win an election because she's got another Democrat running against her, who may very well continue the persecution of Trump if he gets elected, but there's a Trump person that's running against her as well. And if there's two Democrats running against each other, then the votes might very well be split. And this white Trump lawyer who's running for the job might very well win because the votes are split between two Democrats.
Well, I'll tell you what. Until I start seeing politicians taking the old fucking perp walk, I ain't trusting nothing.
No. And just because this Trump lawyer might win doesn't mean that the case is going to automatically be dropped. Because we know this McAfee guy that's the judge in the case is a Fannie Willis person. All right?
Yeah, well, there's one thing about it. If the prosecutor goes in there with paperwork saying we're dropping the case and we're not going to prosecute. The judge doesn't have much fucking choice in the matter. How is he going to hold a trial without a state prosecutor presenting evidence? It ain't going to happen.
Well, we've seen...
I don't even
promise
that.
Yeah.
She's still going to answer those charges about... She's still going to answer the question about her possibly illegal recording the phone call between the defense lawyers in that phone call. Remember Harrison Floyd, the black man, only black defendant in the case?
Yeah.
He's saying that Willis recorded a phone call between her and one of this guy named, I think his name is Karchuoff.
he's represented Harrison Floyd, and one of Cartwright's Maryland-based colleagues was recorded by Fannie Willis without his knowledge, which would be a violation of Maryland's Wiretap Act. When you record a private conversation without consent from both parties, and it's punishable up to 5 years in the joint.
Yep.
Well, here's something, though, that she can use in her defense, is that it is not that way in Georgia.
It depends on where she was. Where was her body at the time? That's the question to be asked.
Yeah. Where was the phone call made from?
Yeah. That's exactly right.
My house.
If the phone call was made from Maryland, she's in trouble.
Yeah.
My house.
There's another phone call that was made from out of Florida to Fannie with Trump lawyers, you know, and Trump people. And she was in on that thing, too. And Florida has the same type of law that Maryland has. You have to have two-person consent. You know?
Well, this day might just be heist on her own petard. I hope to God she is. She ought to blow up real good.
She wishes she could be hoisted on her own petard.
Damn Skippy. I mean, I love the idea of Shakespearean tragedy happening to this thing.
Well, you've got you got an idiot who doesn't know if he's been to a cabin, and that's one of your character witnesses.
Yeah,
he didn't think about it for almost a minute.
Yeah, he did.
And as he was thinking about
which means one of two things, if he had to think that hard about it, was that he was trying to figure out how to lie about it, or it's happened so many times he can't remember which cabin he was in.
Right.
Yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't that memorable. Huh?
Go. Maybe so.
True. That's true.
Maybe so.
He's in trouble with child support now. He's in court trying to get his child support lowered. He said he can't afford it.
You know, here's the other thing that I can't believe that Trump lawyers did not do. Okay? If I would have been them, I think I would have called the wife, his wife, in to testify. As to when, what, and what transpired in their divorce and all of that stuff. And then you sit back and you look at the pictures, comparative pictures of his ex-wife and Fannie Willis, and make you scratch your fucking head.
Yep.
Yeah, well, maybe, just maybe, they're holding that subpoena in reserve for an opportune time. That's a possibility, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the wife could have testified when the affair began. You know, if anybody would have known, the wife would have known that he was having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
And when it started.
She might have known, or she might not have. I don't know.
And really, now that they broke up, it's kind of makes you scratch your head and wonder, well, did he fuck her just to be able to get a job?
Well, it happened in 2019. That was before the Trump deal, so.
Yeah, well, you know.
So there would be no job. He just was in lust.
When our when my shop organized, okay,
mm-hmm.
and it, I scratched my fucking head, okay, and this was union organizing.
Okay.
There was the Teamsters that were organizing, and also IBEW were trying to organize us. Okay.
You get out of there.
So anyway, you know, IBEW would have been the logical.
You won't leave a stupid box alone that.
Hold on for a minute.
Yeah.
Mute
man.
Your phone, guys. Mute your
hey,
phone.
Hey, Robert.
Tripod.
Robert, we can hear you.
Sorry about that. I didn't realize I was even in there.
That's okay,
uh-huh.
buddy.
Well, here's the thing, you know. At the time, the operators in our company outnumbered the technicians. Most of the technicians pretty much wanted to go with IBEW because that was the fit. Those were the guys that generally took care of not only the electricians, but communications workers and stuff like that. Well, the problem was the operators in the company outnumbered the technicians. The operator vote was what gave us the Teamsters. And the only reason we could figure out why the operators chose the Teamsters was the fact that, you know, most of those girls were pushing some pretty good weight around. You know, those chairs that they sat on were pretty stressed. And the only thing we could figure out is that the Teamsters were the only one that would take them out and fuck them.
Well, you can say that. Well, look at. I mean, I wouldn't. I pity looking at Panty Phyllis. I pity that chair when she took the stand.
Well, look, no, I'm telling you, now you guys talk about old Fanny, and Fanny, yeah, she's still a little chunky, but she done dropped a bit of tonnage. Now, I'm looking at her pictures from, like, when she first started this thing with Trump, she has dropped some tonnage, and she's losing more. Maybe it's because of the stress, she ain't eating as much or whatever, but she has dropped some tonnage now. So, I mean, got to be fair to her in that respect. She ain't as big as she was when she first started.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe it's because she can't carry as much cash on her as she used to.
yeah, that's right. That's right. That money belt might have been really heavy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, she announced, I mean, she announced it to the world that she would always carry a minimum of $200 on her. You know, hey, that makes her a prime target for somebody to come and try and rob her.
Yeah, because, you know, it's a black thing. You know, black folks, they're out there, got a cash. Well, that's what Daddy said, right?
And here's the deal. Maybe it was a smart move for Nathan Wade to do that because then he could get his hands on that money belt.
Yeah, well, you know, he got his hands on that money anyway. She paid him in cash.
Yeah.
Hell, maybe he was just operating as a gigolo.
Yeah.
Even a gigolo.
Yeah, a gigolo.
He calls himself a lawyer, but he acts like a male prostitute.
Yeah, gigolo with portfolio. Ha!
Yeah.
Hey, Sarge.
Kathy's talking.
Yes, ma'am. What's up, Kathy? How you doing, Kathy?
doing all right, Sarge. I heard
great.
What you said about it being a black thing with women carrying a lot of money. I told Daniel, I said, maybe I need to start identifying as black because I used to carry about $2,000 or $3,000 in the bottom of my purse.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Oh, yeah.
You did.
All the, yes.
And,
oh,
no. I wouldn't have known. I would have went through
$3,000, I think. That $3,000 no. would be pocket change to Fanny.
I used to call it my slush fund. You know, it wasn't in my wallet. It was not in my wallet, in my purse. I carried it in the envelope in the bottom of my purse.
Can I ask
so
you?
Maybe
what?
What are you looking for? What are you looking for? Unexpected fire sales?
You never
well,
know when you don't need some cash for something, you know. That's how I thought. You never know when you're going to need cash because I don't like using my debit card everywhere. I'm real particular where I use my debit card.
Yeah, I can understand
well, no,
that.
I can understand
I can
that.
Tell,
I can do it.
I can tell you this. My mother-in-law was the same way. When she passed, I wasn't there. One of her friends was there, and I asked her to, you know, get her belongings and stuff and take them to the house and everything. And she got my mother-in-law's purse and, of course, opened it up to see what all was in there, if there was anything that needed to stay behind or whatever. And she found, she called me and she says, you know, there's $500 worth of cash in her purse.
Wow.
It's just something about being broke or not having any cash, you know.
Yeah.
And it got to where I didn't even keep up with how much, you know. So
yeah.
I got me a safe, you know, I got it out. I mean, it was really anywhere between $2,500 and $20,000 in the bottom of my purse. And when I finally got it out, put it in the safe, my purse was so much lighter. You know, it used to be so heavy.
Yeah.
Well, look,
when I went into my mother-in-law's safe deposit box, they had just under $9,000 in cash in the safe deposit box, and it was in two bundles.
Yeah.
One was something like $3,000. The other one was about $6,000. You know, and it was under, at the time, it was just under the limit of, you know, what was reportable at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, look at Donald Trump. Look at how much, relatively speaking, Donald Trump's net worth is in the billions of dollars, but how much cash did he have on hand? He didn't have a lot of cash because he invests his money. Most of his money is in real property, real estate, and other things. He didn't have a lot of cash on hand, but we now know he really is a billionaire. If you look at his assets versus his liabilities. Now we know. Donald Trump's got to be the most studied man in the history of the United States as far as investigation goes, and we know now what his actual wealth is. It is in the billions.
I'm sorry, Sarge. I'm sorry, Sarge, but I'm going to use Judge Enron's assessments on his properties and stuff. So Trump was probably a half a billionaire, not a full billionaire, a half a billionaire, remember? Remember?
Mar-a-Lago is worth at least almost $1 billion, if not more, alone.
Yeah.
That's not including any other property. The man is clearly a billionaire. He just doesn't have it in liquid form, in the form of cash money.
That's right.
They wanted to deprive him of his cash money because they didn't want him to be able to use it in his campaign. They took a look at his FEC filing to see how much cash he had on hand. So they said, oh, we'll take more than, we'll take most of it so he could be crippled with his campaign. That was the reason for that that ridiculously high judgment. They wanted to deprive him of campaign money.
Yeah.
That's right. You're right.
They knocked it down, and then he was able to get it from this guy, this investment banker. They go after the guy that's giving him the loan, gonna get him the money, the $175 million, because they don't like the fact that he's a Trump guy, you know, and he's gonna
get
the money. Yep.
Now, these Soviets are sending an unmistakable a message. You help our enemies, you get on our enemies list. It's just that simple. These people, I keep saying it, they are absolutely Soviet. There's no getting around it.
Yep.
Well, I'm sure those folks are on the phone every day talking with Putin to find out what Putin would do.
Well, I'll tell you what, MSNBC, they called Michael Avenatti the other day, if you guys missed that, from prison. He's in prison, but they wanted his opinion on Trump and the stripper and the trial coming up. So they really dipped down when they called, have to call Michael Avenatti.
Correct.
Yeah, but Avenatti, but here's the thing. Avenatti did not answer the question the way they wanted it to.
Somebody's making a lot of noise, so we got to go ahead. Now say that again.
I was going to say Avenatti did not give MSNBC the answer that they wanted to hear from him.
No, I know. That was what was funny. They didn't know what to do after that.
Correction, Nancy. She's not a stripper. She's a porn star.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, it's like the other one on what, Morning Joe, the other day, they had a panel of supposedly of independent voters and stuff, and they asked them a question on the economy about who would vote for Trump for the Trump economy as opposed to Biden, and every last swinging dick of them on that panel raised their hand for Trump. And they just, Micah, whatever her name is, was just about unable to speak.
Yeah, she was.
You know why Micah and Joe, and Morning Joe hate Trump? Because what happened was they were invited to a thing at Mar-a-Lago, and just before that, she had gone under the knife to get surgery, plastic surgery done, and she was wrapped up in stuff, and she maybe been bleeding or whatever, out from her wound from her surgery and stuff, and Trump being a guy that is a germaphobe, didn't want to have anything, so he sent him home. He sent Joe Scarborough and Micah home because he didn't want her bleeding all over the place, right? So that's why they hate him. That's why they hate him. Now, the other people on that network, I can't speak to, especially fucking Joy Reid, who wears a Trump wig all over the place.
Yeah, what Trump says about these Danes that bleed from their eyes and everything. Remember Megyn Kelly and all that shit? Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love Donald Trump. I'm telling you, he's just so male. That's what what I love about the guy. He's unapologetically, thoroughly male. I mean, look, you can love it or hate it, but that's the one thing about him I think that really bugs liberals. He ain't got a feminist pore in his body, a feminine pore in his body. He's 100% male. They hate that. They just hate that.
They hate the fact that he's 100% alpha male, and he loves him good-looking women.
Yeah, yeah. But mainly the way his attitudes are. He's unfiltered.
Yep.
He's somewhat crass and vulgar occasionally. And, you know, and that's what a lot of men are. A lot of men are like that. And, you know, and he's not nuanced or sophisticated or multicultural. He's just so Trump. I think he has to be so Trump. They just can't stand it. You know, that's what I love about him. He knocks all their notions of what a modern-day politician is supposed to be into a cocked hat. And I just love it. I just love it. I revel in watching him upsetting these fools.
I'll say
hey,
this.
Is Ron Rex still here? Ron Rex still here?
I said this about him. Him being a real estate guy, right, he's rented a lot of real estate in their heads, and he's built some pretty impressive buildings on it because this is what he does. He's in their brains. They can't get him off their mind. You know?
Of course not. They're confounded by Donald Trump. He came out of nowhere politically. Never been elected the dog catcher. The first political job he gets is President of the United States. And he runs the job better than most professional politicians who've ever had the job. He was better than most all of them. And he just can't stand that. Joe Biden,
yep.
40, 50 years in public office, and he ain't worth a mother. You know he ain't. and I was looking today at this video of Joe Biden telling everybody the reason you need to vote for him because Donald Trump's going to get us into a war with Iran.
Mm.
I mean, you ought to see this video. You ought to listen to this video. The reason we need to have him in office over Donald Trump is because he's going to get the United States into war with Iran. I swear to God, you got to hear this. You want to hear it? This bastard.
Yeah, go ahead.
This bastard just say anything. Ah, shit. They got some kind of thing. Something went wrong. As soon as I can pull it up, I'll play it. But you got to hear Biden up here boasting about the fact that he knows what to do because he's been around Washington for so long, and his expertise will guide us through the rocks and shoals of a potential war with Iran. It's a goddamn shame, man. It's great.
You said it earlier, Sarge, when we were talking about when he said about the voter fraud thing, right? Sometimes he, in his dementia, he's very lucid sometimes in his dementia, you know?
He'll say things
that are actually the truth. Oh, that was you, boy. He will say things that the truth that I don't think he knows he's saying.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he's not quite fully demented yet. He's on. He has verges of soberness and recognition, and every once in a while his brain scrambles and you don't know where he is or what he's saying, and then it comes back. And everything gets mismatched and messed. When he loses his train of thought, he goes, "Well, you know what I'm saying. You know the thing. You know the thing. The thing." Yeah, I mean, it regularly comes to it so obvious. And all they want to do is try to explain it away.
That's why they won't let him do a press conference or anything like that, because they absolutely positively, under no certain terms, do not know what's going to come out of his mouth.
Yeah, completely.
Even with a teleprompter.
Have you ever heard a president of the United States so repeatedly and often say over and over and over again, "I can't say that because I'll get in trouble"? How many times have you heard him say this?
Oh, I know.
He said it once in a while. Okay, he said it's a little joke. But he must have said it, I'm thinking, at least 10 or 12 occasions.
At least a
dozen. He's supposed to be the chief executive of the United States of America. Everybody who works in the federal government is a subordinate, without question. All of them. If they work for the federal executive branch of the federal government, every single person in it is a subordinate, with the exception of the vice president. And even then, he's only got a few duties. The vice president only has a few duties, but everybody else in the executive branch, everybody is actually his subordinate. And he's acting like they tell him what to do. They do tell him what to do. And that's what's so frightening about it all. We don't know who they are directly.
Right. We don't know who
it's like this shit that's going down now with Iran and Israel, you know, and Biden's supposedly been on the phone with Netanyahu for a couple hours, you know. Was it Joe that was actually talking to Netanyahu, or was it one of the others that was talking to Netanyahu? Like maybe Obama.
Mm-hmm. And think about this. Obama, remember, Obama hates Netanyahu because at one time in his two terms, he was mucking around in the elections of Israel trying to get the other guy
elected
over. Yep, over Netanyahu, because he hates Netanyahu.
And when Netanyahu visited the White House with Obama there, Obama made him come in the back way.
No, that was the Dalai Lama that he did that to.
No, Netanyahu too.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I said earlier about that the thing's going to be a shit show, the Democratic convention is going to be a shit show, it's not because of us. It's because of the fact that the Muslims, the ragheads, and the terrorists are going to show up and make it a shit show. They hate Israel, the Israel haters.
Well,
you know.
All I can say right now is now that Iran has done what they have done, I would not be surprised at all that the terror operations that they set up through our open border start to happen.
And how many? We talk about the Chinese coming across the border, but how many? We know people from all over the world have been coming across the border. How many of those Iranian National Guard or Iranian Hamas and stuff that have come across the border as well?
A bunch.
We're in a position to exert pressure on our foreign policy toward Israel. That's, we can now see what the plan is probably going to be. And it'll probably, if this thing doesn't come to some kind of conclusion for the Democratic National Convention, they're going to do maximum damage during the Democratic National Convention in August.
I think it's a good idea to have the Republicans to have their convention in July and have it, when it's going to be, and it's going to be a nice and quiet and sane, and just your run-of-the-mill convention, right? And then let the Democrats have the last picture you want.
Mm-hmm.
Is for their convention to be a shit show. That's the greatest picture you want if you're a Republican.
Is there any chance?
Well, I can only say
move it out of Chicago?
Well, I don't know, but I think it's quite appropriate and quite fitting that they're back in Chicago for this.
Oh, me too. Yeah, I think it is.
And,
too.
And here's the other thing. I don't know if you guys saw this or not. I only saw it one time, a news story. The state of Ohio, the Secretary of State of the state of Ohio, sent the DNC a letter stating that unless they move their convention date up, there is a really, really good chance that Joe Biden will not appear on the Ohio state election ballot. Because they will have missed the state line that is in law in the state of Ohio to get him on the ballot.
Yeah, there's a couple other states too. I think there's three altogether with Ohio that are threatening to take him off the ballot. I don't want him off the ballot.
Well, if their state laws say this is the drop-dead date to get on the ballot, and they miss those drop-dead dates, and it's in state law, you know, it's on them, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, it has nothing to do with the 14th Amendment or anything like that. He just missed the deadlines to get on it, get himself on the ballot.
Mhm. And that is all on that is all on him, and the people who are running, the so-called people who are running his administration. I mean, they have to know if you're.
The convention choice and timing of the convention is generally set by the party.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be absolutely, totally fucking amazing if nobody in the DNC happened to check all the laws in all of the states and say, you know, fellers, this date ain't going to work, you know. Because we gotta have him picked or somebody picked, you know, by such and such a date to get on the state ballots.
Mm-hmm. And to tell you the truth, I don't think he'd win Ohio anyway, or Biden.
Well, probably not, but still. You know, it's a battleground state. You don't want to fuck up in a battleground state, period.
Yep.
End of story. You don't want to fuck up in any state, period. End of story. You know?
Biden is just a giant fuck up anyway.
Well, like Obama said, don't put it past Biden to fuck up anything he touches.
Yep.
Say that, didn't he? Yes, he did. Did anybody listen to Trump's rally today?
No, haven't.
I haven't either, and I did see the whole thing when Mike Johnson, with him and Mike Johnson, they spoke in Mar-a-Lago, though.
You're right.
I saw that. I did not see the rally. Where was it anyway?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know, he thinks he's going to win these states.
Oh, yeah.
Trump thinks he's going to win. He also thinks he's going to flip New York. You know, now, I believe him when I see it.
Yeah.
I believe him when I see it, but he thinks he can flip New York, you know. I know people say, well, Hawaii doesn't matter, but because it's a Democrat thing anyway, but they hate. The people of Hawaii hate him hate Biden. I mean, look at that. Look at that snapshot of him driving down the street and them flipping him off, you know?
Yeah, he's not liked in a lot of places. I feel sorry for the ladies that work at the Chick-fil-A. They're catching hell for how they treated Donald Trump. They're catching hell from some of the people in Atlanta. Too bad.
No, I mean, why would they be catching hell and the people that were lined up on the road saying, fuck Fannie Willis and go Trump, go after he got his picture taken at the jail, you know?
Yeah.
Not be, you know, because it's the same people.
Yeah, I don't know, bud. I don't know. I can't figure people out.
The answer is simple. Because in every corner of the land, there are people that are infected with Trump derangement syndrome. It doesn't matter how many people like him. You can always find some lunatics who dislike him simply because he's for making America great again. So it doesn't matter how many people in Fulton County like him. You can find a few fanatics who just despise him for being Donald Trump. That's just that simple. There's nowhere in the United States you're going to be able to go where you can't find some lunatic fanatics who have Trump derangement syndrome. There's nowhere.
Nowhere, yep.
I love it when they ask people, why don't you like Donald Trump? And a lot of them just stare at him because they don't have an answer. And some of them say, I don't like how he talks.
That's pretty much the only answer you get.
Yeah.
I like what he said.
There was another time that I believe MSNBC went into a black barbershop, right, and asked them who they were voting for, and they all said Trump. You know, it wasn't the answer they wanted. You know. It wasn't the answer they wanted, though. They got an answer, but it wasn't the one they wanted, you know.
No, I like it. The MS,